Yeah, you know.
A few apologies. Mankuna is not here. Only coming back next week due to ill health. Honorable Abraham is still booked off sick. Only coming back next week as well. And Honorable Kraylen will also be joining us next week after a long period of absence. So, yeah. That's a little bit of a problem. All good, Panikas? Okay. So those are the four apologies that we have. We have not heard anything from Honorable BC Oh, I'm told she has also apologized. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. That was fine. They're also busy with bills. That's fine. So that's where the issues are. In terms of our program, honorable members, the issue is that we've got to start with deliberations on the bill. We have had 3 days of public hearings last week, and it's up to members to say, having heard what they've heard, how do we proceed with regard to taking into account what various stakeholders that we had invited had said. Perhaps before we could start, Salga would want to talk to us. As well as the Commission on Gender Equality. They want to talk to us about the bill. So, if members do agree, we can then revise our program in such a way that we are able to hear what they say whilst busy proceeding with the deliberations. From where I'm sitting, I think these are important stakeholders that it would be important to hear what they've got to say. Is that acceptable? Honorable
Yeah, I think, Jefferson, thank you. I think what we then need to do, in fact, anybody who wants to speak to us, we should not solve our laws in terms of this. Because we don't want to open some loopholes. My final surprise, whatever reason. So I think we should allow them to come and speak to us and hear what they have to say. And then we give it to them. And more especially, Salga. I see the gender is quite defined and important, but they are not more important than Salga. Salga is critical in terms of
hey, that's a mindset.
My apologies. I I see how honorable Nell is mine.
He's careless. And the least prophet is coming, and we men will be half of the delegates, you know.
I must go and join the youth league. It's where the careless is allowed. Keep up. You've got to stick over it.
I'm going to find Nika. I'm going to find Nika.
Get the support of my driver in the
kitchen. I think it's essential, sorry, that we listen to people who want to, to make comments on this bill, because from all the hearings that we've heard today, or in the past, was actually the lack of interaction between the department and people who were, in a sense, involved. So we cannot close the doors. We must do that and hear what they have to say.
Okay. So then... our committee secretariat would deal with that and see what day of the week will we be able to slot them on the program. As I said, honorable members, we have had two or three days of public hearings. The first was the department, and the subsequent two was the forested program. Now it's up to us to say what is it that we say with regard to the bill, what amendments we think we need to see, take into account what has been said, and take it from there. Honorable,
let me show what we need to do, because before we insert the amendment, maybe because it's the first meeting after the public hearing, maybe we need to hear the department responding in terms of the public hearing, so that we hear what they have to say. So maybe after that, we then come back to the insertion of the amendment. Because, see, at this stage, we have not heard them responding to a number of critical issues that were raised. So that we take it from there. I think that's my proposal. I don't know what my colleagues think.
Okay. Honorable
Fanica?
I think it's necessary that we discuss how we're going to proceed with this bill in the light of what has been said at the hearing. Because we can now start to amend on what we heard at the hearings without the detail that was given by the people who gave the presentation. And we will now do it from our side, thinking how things should be done at ground level, where there's a big lack of communication between the people who have to implement this act eventually and the people who drew up this book. If we go through all the hearings, every one of them said, what a surprise that we got. All of a sudden, we were not really consulted. We were not taken into consideration. Our practical experience and how to apply this act was not really consulted. So now we, on this portfolio committee, are going to be the wise people now who are going to do that. I would really suggest that somewhere we must find a way that this expertise of the people working, and this is big municipalities, this is provinces, it is people who, and Salga, well, we haven't heard Salga yet, but if we look at all regions, all of them said, we want to participate and make this act work. Now, what's going to happen if we now start amending without the support people at ground level who have to implement it? We will be running in circles. We will eventually keep on amending this act to bring it, to make it better. Let us rather set the course time aside. Let this department go back and consult with these expertise in the short term. And come back with something which is really acceptable to these people who have been made representation. So, because how are we going to test our amendment? On what we know, on the 3-4 of us here? So, somewhere, and that's what I think, for it to become practical, let's consult the people who are worked with it and who have to implement this eventually. We're making here an act without taking that into consideration. That is what is worrying me about this whole story. That the act is necessary, that it has to consolidate, that it has to bring in this, of course, that's not the point. The point is how we do this, because there's no clarity in this act on how it's been done. There's no principle status, there's no policy in this. And even in the first instance where they say, if we to rectify problems of the past, the suggestion by the department on this is that the politicians are excluded on this committee. You see, how do you give a political input to people who are in politics or taken out of the decision making? So we have a lot of things that I find difficult in this group. And I suggest that the department has an earnest at a time of a number of months to come back and after good consultation, then bring in, give us then a document in front of us which is really relevant. Thank you.
that's one view. As I'm listening to Honorable Lali, he's saying that let's proceed with the amendment. And Honorable Panika is of a different view that the bill must be referred back for the department to further consult. If I'm paraphrasing you correctly. Ma'am Lydia.
I understand you have given some for the other coming to the now. If we continue the amendment now, and still open the room for other players to agree that we have to come to the meeting. Are we going to start again against the amendment? Maybe the thing is say something that we amend, what we are going to agree on here now. It is not better for us to so as we often hear it, we let everybody that we have a chance to come and continue to do that. And when we start with amendments, we have taken on board the amendments that we have come in submission that we have written for the next session. I don't know how we're going to do it.
If we proceed, Mamedia, and as I said, Salga would like to talk to us and the Commission on Gender Equality. If we decide to proceed, even after hearing what they say, we can still, you know, take their views on board in terms of those detailed amendments. So that space would still be there if we decide that we proceed today with the bill, but still have time either tomorrow or on Thursday to hear what Salah has got to say. As I said, we may have to relax our program a little bit so that we are able to hear all these people that want to talk to us. The second thing is that however we decide, if we decide to proceed with the PA, it therefore means that by the 19th or the 20th of August, it must be with the National Assembly for it to be able to reach the deadlines that are there, so that the NCOP process can kick in. Which therefore means that if we say we refer back to the department to consultation, the issue would be between now and the 19th of August. Would that have happened? You know? So that it is still in time for the deadlines that are there. That's one dynamic to it. I need to be guided as to how to improve. Salik?
Yeah. My proposal is that in the light of what is taking place now, and also in the light that our thing suggests that let's engage the department. We don't do amendments now. We engage the department in terms of their reform. You know, even the question that was asked by the Honourable Trump, they must reform, because at the hearing, they were just here and there. Now they reform in detail. We deal with that process today, not going through the amendments yet. And the issues that we see ourselves that are not covered in terms of the deal, we ask them a clarity why this issue, say for example, because of the committee, we ask them, tell me, how on earth in the local government level would the councillors or politicians or whatever you call it, are excluded? Then they explain it and say. So we take that particular point. Then once then we had these two presentations that have been coming, then it is then that we deal with the question of the amendment. Or maybe the question of this question of we go ahead or not, whatever question it is. But at this stage, you are still on the basis that you are on my head. But the process is must take its course in terms of the stages that they need to take its course. And that was my proposal, sir, that today we engage the department in terms of their reform. Even if we engage in number of presentations, but we don't do amendments now, so that we allow the certain processes, inverted commas, that may take place in between, you know?
I can support that, but I think this will prove my point as we go along, that how do we clarify the suggestions made if we do not have, we cannot go back to the people who have to implement it and see what their opinion is. So somewhere we'll have to have consultations after this to make sure that what we suggest here is in line with what's happening in practice. I would like to hear the department's response to this, so I can support the member, but let's not go into the amendments at this stage, and let's see what amendments the department would suggest in this regard, and then see how acceptable those amendments would be to the people who have to apply it and implement it.
Okay. I think now we're going somewhere. Gigi, your team was here, and the state law advisor, you are there, what did we hear, and how do you respond to that?
Chairperson, our view is that we have looked at all the presentations. In fact, we have analyzed all the presentations that were made here to say what were the issues that were raised by the City of Johannesburg, what came from the Office of the Premier in the Western Cape, what came from the Community Law Center, of the University of the Western Cape, what came from FW de Klerk Center for Constitutional Rights, what came from Urban Landmark, what came from South African National Biodiversity Institute from SAPI. We have analyzed each one of them, and we have taken those into account. And we have looked at some of those issues in the light of the bill, and to say, to respond to those, what could be the proposals to take their comments and concerns into account. So we do have that analysis purposes, and we did reflect on some of these issues when we had a session with the state law advisor, and the state law advisor has come up with some of the comments and highlight some of the issues that could be necessary as our response to the issues that were raised. So, Chairperson, I think in response to this, I'm saying we have done the analysis. We would be guided by you if you would like us to take you through all of those responses. So we've done the responses, and we've highlighted the areas where you would consider the amendments if they were, if you would accept them. But there are issues where there may be disagreement on some of the issues that are raised, and it does not point to a lack of consultation if you have consulted with people and they disagree with you on that particular point. For example, one of the issues where there has been a clear disagreement was the fact of collapsing the spatial planning and the development legislation into one legislation. Our view was that that can be housed under a different legislation than special than land use management. So to, if there is a difference in the approach to the legislation around that, it does not mean that there was no consultation, but it means that there has been disagreement around how that particular issue could be approached. So the point I'm making is that we have responded to those people. I may add that we have been discussing with SALGA, and the person who was working with SALGA left SALGA to go and work with Public Works, and he's no longer there. But we have agreed that we can meet with them on Friday and have a technical discussion around what are the areas that they are raising. In front of me, I've got the summary of the issues raised in the public hearing and the draft response that we have both from the state law advisor and from the department. So I'll be guided by you if you would like to go ahead with that.
Yeah, that's what the committee has said. But I think you've got to premise your presentation with this issue of consultation. To then go into the extent to which you agree or disagree with the presentation that we made last week, where you could suggest amendments. The committee would hear you, and it would be their call. That's what we're going to do.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah. On the issue of consultation, I think when we looked at this, we looked at five issues. We looked at the consultation process. We looked at the treatment of the public hearings, information that were made there, and we looked at the constitutional issues that were raised during the public hearing, and we looked at the repeal of legislation, whether it is exhaustive enough, and then we looked at the proposed amendment. If I start with the consultation process, we did say that we have done a lot of consultation since we started in 2001. And if you look at what was the original bill in 2001 and what was the bill in 2004 which was published, those two bills that were published, you will see that there is a big difference between that original bill in 2001 and the bill that was published in 2008 April. That alone is an indication that there was consultation, there were disagreements, and we find some common ground on the agreement. That's why we came with the new bill now. That's by way of indicating some of the differences from then. One of the major things then was that the legislation included a lot of other issues at the level of the municipalities. There was a change in that the emphasis was that let's have the three tiers of government included in the legislation, the national as in the land use commission, the provincial as in the tribunal, the municipal level as in the land use committees. Those changes were as a result of a lot of discussion that happened. And I must indicate that the many inputs that came, which led to these changes, were coming primarily from the government department, which was largely National Treasury, the Presidency, DPLG, that made some changes, significant changes, which led to this current bill that we're talking about. Those changes were made. Now, on the just before we published this bill in 15 April 2008, we did consultation with those people who registered different opinions, different views around this process. This is why the bill looks like what it is now, as published in April 2008. There were some of those people that have said that we have not consulted. We do have evidence that they were consulted. They have also admitted that they were consulted, but they were consulted as individuals. So the manner in which they were consulted is the issue that is in question. The manner in which they were consulted, that they were consulted not as, for example, SAPI organization, but as a chairperson of SAPI as an individual. So we do have a written response and email to that effect, which shows that actually the substance of the matter was sitting there with them, but they did not respond to raise issues. It came as a surprise when they raised those issues here. But nevertheless, those issues have been addressed in the proposals that we're talking about here, following their presentation here. One of the issues that was highlighted during these hearings was that the purpose of this bill is not very clear that it will deal with these issues effectively. To that extent, we have proposed the review of the preamble, and we do have the example of that preamble, what it would cover, to cover the concerns that were raised. So we do have that draft amendment to the preamble, which you could consider. We have looked at the other areas in the amendment. Perhaps to be systematic, we can look at some of the proposals as have been presented by the state law advisor in that framework, which is suggesting some of the ways in which we can deal with these we can deal with these issues that we raised. I'm going to ask Sunday to take us through some of those proposed of that effect areas of amendment.
I don't think that the difference between what we suggested and doing at all. Really at all. Just not an end. We don't want you to tell us that this is amendment. We said you must respond to the presentation. You're not responding to the presentation. I allowed you because I thought as a DT you're just doing some general overview. Then the functional response is going to go DT. We are here today, nothing else to do, just to respond, to listen to you. We engage you here. I don't want you to quickly go to the amendment. One thing that is amendment now. We are interested in response of the issues, each and every presentation that came before us. You must deal with it. And this you are also respectful. It's not tears, it's tears of problems. You are not treating tears of problems. The tears get to be at the local level between the district council and local authorities. Thank you.
I accept those comments, and on the screen we do have the submissions, which are our comments, presentation by presentation, and how we have dealt with them. So I'm on the screen. That is what I wanted us to look at, because we have done the analysis of what were the issues that were raised, and we will respond to those. We can talk to it, and then we'll ask our officials to make copies of this.
I think we must wait for that, sir, because that is the correct way if they talk to something that was given to the community. We must also invite more information.
Thank you.
each of the presentations and what we have captured out of those presentations and link that to the bill. And whilst we have said that those are some of the considerations to be made, the responses are captured in the second document that was circulated, that is said to be the proposed amendments, should be proposed responses to those issues that were raised there. So I will ask Sunday to take the first presentation first, how we have responded to, for example, the city of Johannesburg.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, the submissions from city of Johannesburg, we must prefer that we read the submissions of City of Johannesburg to be saying that they are supportive of the bill. In supporting the bill, they are further suggesting improvements to certain parts of the bill. They suggested that we should attend to the definition of application in the bill. And application is in the definition section of the bill, which is section 1, or clause 1 of the bill. They are saying that at the moment, the definition of application does not include removal, amendment, or suspension of restrictive conditions. We believe this particular one should have been one where we explain to one another what it is all about. Application is defined in the functional definition of application is contained in clause 33 of the bill. And we will have loved to explain. Of course, initially in the definition section, we had referred to 39. We will be proposing that the reference should be to 33 and not 39, in which case, this comment from the city of Johannesburg will have been addressed if we do that. So in the response and the way it can be captured, where we will be suggesting that we relook the definition section to attend to that concern. The definition of piece of land not sufficient. We have looked at it. We have looked at the provisions of the Land Survey Act. We have looked at the provisions of the Deeds Registry Act. And we do believe that we are consistent in the definition and the use of the word piece of land to that extent. They also mentioned the question of the definition of the restrictive condition, that it should draw a distinction between restrictions and obligations. We've looked at the Removal of Restrictions Act. We have looked at the wordings of this bill, and we are quite confident that both the law as it is drafted and the common law, and in practice, will support what they are suggesting without a need to amend the bill. So we take note of the comments. We do not, however, believe that there is need to draw a direct distinction between restrictions, which is more, they are more looking at the positive and the negative sides of restrictive conditions. And there are at least three categories of restrictive conditions. We believe that we are covered in Section 35, Clause 6. They are suggesting that the heading of Clause 5, which is presently norms and standards, reflect compulsory norms and standards. These are issues they will be advised by the state to advise about, but we do not have any opposition to taking on board that comment, because indeed it is compulsory norms and standards. Regarding the composition of the members of the Municipal Land Use Committee, which is in Clause 9 of the bill, the suggestion there is that we should ensure that the Municipal Land Use Committee is headed by a legally qualified person. We take note of this comment. We indeed do understand and appreciate the nature of the concern they have in Johannesburg, considering the high caliber nature of applications on land use that they deal with in Johannesburg. They even have senior counsel appearing before some of these bodies in Johannesburg. But that will not be so for Pite municipality, for another municipality in Northwest, or a municipality in Northern Cape, or even probably in Southern Cape, as opposed to Western Cape also. So we're saying that we do not want to be overly prescriptive in terms of saying a legally qualified person should preside over the Municipal Land Use Committee. There is nothing, we have looked at the bill, there is nothing in the bill at the moment which precludes them from appointing a legally qualified person to preside over their own Municipal Land Use Committee. What we do not want to do is to impose for other municipalities, and then they don't have a lawyer around, or they have a quack, they just want to satisfy the legal provision by bringing somebody who has no interest in the subject matter. So we have left it without attending to it the way and manner they have suggested it, because what they are suggesting can be done in practice without amending the bill. They are saying that, the bill at the moment, Clause 8 is saying that in terms of appointment of members of the Municipal Land Use Committee, we're saying that the executive authority, which we have defined in the definition section, the executive authority of the municipality, is defined on page 5 of the bill, in the definition section, which is your mayor or the executive committee of the municipality, should appoint members of the Municipal Land Use Committee. We believe that the executive authority, the politicians, should be the ones to appoint members of the Municipal Land Use Committee. They are suggesting that we should have a more flexible method. And what they are saying is that staff come, staff goes, every time they should they go back to the council. And going to the council in a municipality like the city of Johannesburg in a metro, the mayor is probably very far from the official. It may not be the case in a smaller municipality. But the reality is that we do not want to totally separate the political management of land use from the question of who presides over land use decisions. So our considered view, and based on extensive consultations we've had, and in fact, if we go down to other comments, some people are actually saying that we are removing elected officials from this issue. And if we do what they are saying now, we'll be further and further removing elected representatives of the people from land use management entirely. So but what we have done, instead of accepting totally what they have said, is to suggest to the state advisor an amendment to Clause 8, which seeks to recognize the need for the executive authority or the political authority in a municipality to do the appointment or to also design or approve a framework for that appointment. So what we have at the moment is one which says that the executive authority must appoint. But what we are proposing is that the executive authority must appoint, but may also approve an appointment method, which means that it may not directly get it, but that decision should be that of the executive council. So we're accommodating them, but not to the extent they have suggested here. The question of term of office in clause 14, the bill at the moment proposes that the term of office should be for 3 years. We are accepting that there may be need for variation here and there. And in order not to be overly prescriptive, what we are suggesting is that the term of office of the Municipal Land Use Committee should be determined by the councillors. So we are proposing, if it is okay with them, that we remove the limitation of 3 years term of office as it is. We rather make it the question of the term of office and the further terms and conditions of appointment of members of the Municipal Land Use Committee should be a determination made by the political authority within the municipality. And that's what we'll be proposing to the committee to look at in response to this particular comment from the City of Johannesburg. The other one is also a bit of a drafting suggestion regarding Chapter 3, Part 2, which we presently say Provincial Land Use Tribunal. They are suggesting that we should just call it Provincial Tribunal. We'll submit that to the stable advisor. It doesn't affect the substance of the document. Clause 32, read with Schedule 1 of the bill, talks to land use restricted to the purpose for which the land use scheme allows it. Also, a purpose in Schedule 1 of the bill, to the extent that there is no town planning scheme, and those listed purposes are there. What they are saying, what City of Johannesburg is saying here, is that in Johannesburg, they will have a lot of land which are initially mining land. Those lands are now deproclaimed because mining activities are no longer going on there. And if, as we currently have it in Schedule 1 of the bill, mining purposes is one of the scheduled purposes in terms of Schedule 1, which is made in terms of Clause 32, that we may unwittingly be creating a scenario or a problem where somebody can revert back to use because there is no town planning scheme and the Section 32 recognizes mining purposes as one of the scheduled purposes. So they are saying we should specifically deal with the question of the proclaimed mining land. We'll be proposing a subclause to address this concern because it may be genuine that may be an unintended consequence of that proclamation of the mining land to avoid that people go back without seeking approval. So we'll be doing that. They suggested that we synchronize the heading of 27 to 33. Those are basically printer's error. Those are things that came out in the printing process where the arrangement of the head is not synchronized, is not saying the same thing as the actual body of the legislation says. They suggested that we should look at 27 and 33. We've gone beyond that. We've cleaned it up with the central advisor, and those are typographical issues we'll attend to, including what Honorable Dalia suggested to us that there were clauses that we repeated the clause twice at some point. We dealt with some of those housekeeping jobs. There is another comment, Honorable Members, regarding clause 35 of the bill, which is more on removal of restrictions. Presently, removal of restrictions is governed by the Removal of Restrictions Act of 1967. What we do have is a scenario where, and if we look at the nature of restrictive conditions, it may be imposed because people agree today, but tomorrow or years later, that restriction may not be necessary, or people may think, I do not want to bind myself with this restriction. So the process at the moment is to make an application. A publication is then made to say, are people objecting that this restriction be removed? And if there is no objection or if the premier approves, that restriction may be removed. What we have proposed in the bill as it is, if you look at clause 35 sub 2 and 3, is to create a scenario where property rights of people may be affected by the removal of restrictions. And we've in sub 4 of 35 proposed that the award for compensation has the status of a court of a civil jurisdiction. What City of Johannesburg is saying is that the question of compensation, especially unlimited compensation, may be problematic. We have since reviewed the whole issue of compensation occurring as a result of removal of restrictions, and I will be suggesting that together with the state advisor, if the committee approves, that we should remove present sub clause 2, 3, and 4 of clause 35 of the bill to deal with that. So we're taking their suggestions on board. 35.2a, we presently we refer to section 25 of the constitution. They are saying we should also refer to section 24 of the constitution, which talks to the protection of the environment, is the right to environment. We are proposing the removal of 35.2 entirely because of the issue of compensation and desirability of it. And in response to the previous comment they have made, so if we have done that, then this particular suggestion falls away. It will not be necessary. The suggestion is also that regarding clause 37.2, Roman 2, item AA, that we should add the word environment after L. I will be taking that on board. They also suggest that we should define what is undue delay. What happens in practice is that rather than use the word undue delay, what the present regulatory framework has used in a number of instances is unreasonable delay. We believe that we cannot particularly define undue delay without doing injustice or violence to that word. What we propose to do is to functionally regulate what amounts to undue delay in specific instances. So the question of undue delay will be subject of further regulation. So we will not need to define it in the bill as it is. Yeah. I now move to the comments and submissions from the Office of the Premier, Western Cape. I do not think they presented. They wrote in submissions, but they did not present in the public hearing. The main grounds of the Office of Premier Western Cape is the question of distribution and allocation of powers in this bill among the three spheres of government, which is the national, provincial, and the municipal affairs. They are saying that we are underplaying the role of the role of provinces in this regard. They are saying that we were seeking to bypass the provinces to deal directly with the municipalities. They are saying that the province ought to be recognized more than we are presently recognized the bill. The way we understand their comments, they are basically saying, give the province more power. Honorable members, we have since looked at the bill again. We have suggested, if the House approves, that some amendments be made to 5, 6, 7, 8, a couple of sections to further define what is provincial interest. We do believe, we must say, that the way the bill is structured at the moment, especially if we look at clause 7 of the bill, we believe we will pass the constitutional threshold. Of constitutional, we'll be constitutional in saying that we already cater for a situation where the province will make additional legislation, will make determinations of what amounts to provincial interest. We'll be amplifying that more, and we'll be tying it to the provisions of the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. But we do recognize as a concern that the provinces want to continue to play a role as the constitution envisages for them in the question of the supervision of municipalities. We do, however, believe that the provincial supervision of municipalities did not exclude or restrict or limit the role of national government in actually interacting with these two other spheres. And I would believe that with further clarity on this will be introduced by some of the suggested amendments we are making. But in all, we are saying that we all can coexist in this field without necessarily undermining anybody or any sphere of government. Honourable members, there is another allegation from Western Cape, which is also repeated in one of the submissions, that we are altering long-standing and accepted principles in this bill. The federal said we are using housing-based terminology. Let's look at one of those they have raised, the World Town Planning Scheme. Before now, we did not have wall-to-wall municipalities. Municipalities, the councils as they were before the suite of local government laws, existed in the main town. And if we look at it in racial terms, they were literally the previously white areas that were in the town. They were the previously white areas that had town planning schemes. There were no town planning schemes in any area that was previously occupied by non-whites. With the local government legislation, we're now saying all the country will be covered by wall-to-wall municipalities. We do not necessarily agree that the word town applies everywhere. And we have also stated that town and regional planners, by their training, their training has traditionally been located around town planning. In fact, if you do town planning, one of the few universities with very well-recognized qualifications in the country, if you go to University of Cape Town, what they study is city planning. They do masters in city planning. So if you live in areas that are not be recognized as cities, they don't plan for you. So what we are saying is that in order to be inclusive, we do not want to, we will prefer not to continue with the word town planning as it is, because the focus of town planning has been urban planning. We then want to use something which is inclusive of both the towns and the so-called non-towns, and especially the rural areas. We believe they truly and constitutionally deserve planning also. So to that extent, we're saying the word land use planning is more inclusive than the word town planning. So when they say we are altering long-standing principles, to an extent we must accept that we're changing the word town planning to land use in this instance. Because that's what we want people to do, to plan for all the land in the country. And we have also said in the bill anyway that the word land use scheme includes any town planning scheme that was in place before this legislation. So they are not, what town planning schemes are not being declared illegal. Until amended, it remains. It is just that town planning schemes will have the status of a land use scheme. So that's what the provisions of the bill, if I can quickly refer to it, in the transitional clause, suggest, if you look at clause 78.2 of the bill says that a town planning scheme, which existed when this act took effect, remains in force until replaced by a land use scheme, and may, until replaced, be amended in terms of 3. So we're not really challenging removing town planning. We're only saying that they must conform to the present system. They also challenge the use of the word tribunal at provincial level. It really confers no substance to whether you call it a tribunal, you call it a board, or you call it a commission, or you call it a panel. The reality is the essence of what it do. Some people are used to calling the tribunals. In fact, 8 of the 9 provinces in the country have tribunals. In Western Cape, they did not use the DSA. So now say that we're using tribunal as a housing-based principle is a little bit not the whole of the truth. It's actually that they might as well say that we're using terminologies that are non-Western Cape. And the question is, we would rather attend to substance of the complaint as opposed to the terms or the form of it. We want to talk to substance. The next comment was the question of forward planning. I don't remember, forward planning will then refer to your IDP, it's interconnection with the other sectoral plans, SDF, and the national land use planning. We may recall that in one or two areas, some people made submissions that said we're too prescriptive. In some areas, they're saying we did not go enough. At national level, our view is that maybe I should go back to the white paper. The white paper that was released promised that we have a single legislation and there will not be provincial legislation. We have since revised that view to say we want to introduce a framework legislation which allows space for differences to be expressed within a national framework. So to that extent, we have addressed the linkages between the sectoral plans without going into too much detail of what is already regulated in any event in your Municipal Systems Act. If we look at the Municipal Systems Act, it goes into this question of forward planning. We will not want to replace it. This argument actually goes to the question of an overall legislation for planning and development. It's a double-edged sword. If we do this forward planning, we'll be encroaching into other space. We'll be managing things which go beyond land use planning. We agree that they are related. So we're saying that we have drawn and pointed to the necessary linkages, but we will not be addressing forward planning in greater detail more than we have done at the moment. Western Cape is also saying that provinces should approve land use schemes. With respect, Honorable Dali reminded my DG now that we do not have tiers anymore, we have spheres. We were reminded that we truly have spheres. In the former tier system, provinces should and could approve schemes made by municipalities. Indeed, if we look at a lot of pre-1994 legislation, because of the constitutional role of municipalities pre-1994, a land use scheme in terms of the land use planning ordinance would ordinarily be subject of approval by provinces because of the provincial legislation. In the constitutional system we have today, we are saying that it is neither desirable nor constitutionally feasible that we should relate on the basis of approving each other's work. We would believe that there should be other models of interaction that the Constitution enjoins us to follow, which goes beyond approval. So to that extent, we are saying that the land use scheme will have been made consistently with other provincial plans, consistently with other national plans, but it is not for us to approve it because the provincial law does not get approved by the national parliament. And a land use scheme is technically a bylaw of a municipality. So we would not be constitutionally right to be suggesting that the land use scheme, which has the status of a bylaw, should be approved by a provincial body. It would be doing too much. And that's why we're saying that the key essence of the complaint by Western Cape is an attempt to subordinate the municipalities. And we're not very sure that the municipalities themselves will be very excited by some of these requests, that we should allow them to supervise. This will go beyond supervision in our view. Now, they are saying that the bill micromanages as opposed to providing principles. We can look at the essence of Western Cape comments. They want power, but they said national government, national sphere, keep up. That exactly is the essence of this message. We do not believe we are micromanaging because we have not in any event subjected any action of the provincial government to approval of the national government. We have carved out spaces for each of the spheres. We have properly invested the provinces appoint their land, they appoint land use tribunals. They determine their matters of provincial interest. They can make further provincial legislation. They even sit on appeals over decisions of municipal land use committees. We don't do that. It's only in very limited cases that decisions at provincial level may reach national level, if there are sufficient reasons to do that. So we do not agree that we're micromanaging. We have not done that in any section of this bill. The next allegation is more around constitutionality. They are saying that this bill purports to be a Section 44(2) legislation in terms of the Constitution. That indeed and in fact, it is not. The essence of this argument is to say, national government, leave us to do as you wish with the province or the municipality. You do not have power to regulate this area. With respect, this is a fallacy. The Fiscal Planning Act is still in the law. The DFA, they said the City of Johannesburg opinion said they disagree with the judgment in Johannesburg on an application in terms of the DFA. The DFA is a national legislation. In this field, it is still a national legislation. But to the extent that we wish to squarely put this legislation within the purview of Section 44(2) of the Constitution, because the net effect is to be able to say where there exists a national legislation and a provincial legislation, the first price is consistency. The provincial legislation must be consistent to the national legislation. Where there is no consistency between national legislation and provincial legislation, on the question of land use, we are proposing that that conflict be interpreted in line with Section 146 of the Constitution, which then suggests that in terms of 146(2) of the Constitution, this national legislation will prevail over the provincial legislation, insofar as there is a conflict between them. And I would believe that the grounds set for a national legislation in terms of 44(2) were fulfilled that. So to further demonstrate that, we'll be suggesting to the Honorable House to consider the possibility of a preamble to the bill. And we have submitted to the civil advisors wordings that will attempt to further clarify and demonstrating our intention to put this legislation within the provisions of Section 44(2) of the Constitution. Yeah. The allegation is almost all in cycles. They are understood. It's just that we sometimes need to explain to each other. The next allegation, honorable members, is that there are unconstitutional interference in provincial mandates. The province wants to approve land use schemes of municipalities. We are not seeking to approve anything from the province. We're only saying, let us design a governance framework in this respect.
Sunday, I'm not sure if it's appropriate to say these are allegations.
Chair, maybe Queen's English is probably a challenge to some of us. But the way I see them is like they are stating that because if you say constitutionality, you are saying that we see it from one side, that on their side what they are saying is that we have not complied with the constitution. So I thought they have alleged. Yeah, that's their view. Their view amounts to an allegation. We were responding. We have not alleged. We're stating that in response to a contention they have made. Okay. Our view, Chair, in response to their contention or their statement or view, is that we have not unconstitutionally interfered with provincial mandates. We are very open to any discussion around the constitutionality in this respect, because we are pretty sure that we're on safe ground after we have gone. As against the comments from the City of Johannesburg, the Office of the Premier Western Cape states that decision making should be with elected officials and not appointed officials. Maybe it's important we clarify what we are proposing in this bill, because it appears to have been said that we are taking all powers from elected officials. If it were to be so, it would be grievous, but it is not so. Okay. Indeed, it is not so. We have distributed the powers in such a way that it's inclusive. If we look at the municipal sphere, if we look at the intervention. At the minister's fair, you need to do a land use scheme. You need to then, in terms of the land use scheme, and in accordance with clause 33 of the bill, make land use decisions in each case as defined in the bill. We are saying that with regard to land use scheme, the municipal council, the elected officials, the elected representatives of the people, the council actually approves, they don't just approve, they develop, they prepare, they adopt, and they amend. I think that will be clause 44 of the bill. No, sorry. It's 47 of the bill. Well, 47 of the bill says that the executive authority of the municipality must do so and so. They also do more. The executive, the politicians also give guidance, they monitor, and they oversee the responsibilities. If you look at clause 47 of the bill, they oversee the responsibilities assigned to officials of municipalities. So to contend that decision making should remain with elected officials presupposes that there is no decision making with elected officials, and that's why we're saying that the premise upon which this contention is based with respect is false. It's false to the extent that it is not true. And what we are saying further is that there is a role for elected officials. In addition to that, if we look at the appointment of people to consider applications, we will then be able to read clause 8 of the bill together with 47 of the bill. And clause 8 of the bill states upfront, the executive authority of a municipality must establish a municipal land use committee. We're not gonna, if you read clause 8 with 47, it precise, it consolidates the power of the elected representatives of the people to determine the land use scheme, to appoint those who, in their name and on their behalf, will consider each application. I mean, if you look at Johannesburg, they receive hundreds of applications on a daily basis. I wonder how many councillors that will really have time to sit to consider 300 applications. So we must look at how this thing works in practice. To say that councillors should sit and consider land use applications, with respect, it's the ideal situation. But we're saying that they should do land use schemes. They should then determine the parameters within which officials consider applications that must conform to the land use schemes that they have made. We are further saying that they must give guidance to these officials. Honorable members will be proposing, if it's acceptable to the committee, that we further amend clause 8 to create a specific scenario where the appointment, the terms and conditions, the duration of appointment of members of the municipal land use committee will be as determined by the executive authority. But what we're saying is that we have clearly defined the role for officials who will always act under the policy guidance of the elected representatives of the people. And as such, we are saying that this is our proposal. So it's not really that we are disagreeing. We are just saying that they are proceeding from a bit of a slightly faulty premise. And the conclusion, certainly, if the premise is wrong, is likely not to be. Community Law Center. The University of Western Cape assisted us a great deal. They assisted us in defining the problem. They confirmed a number of things that we know, that we agree with. In terms of saying that there is confusion among the roles of different spheres of government. Because of the plethora of legislation that exists in this field, because of the fact that land use itself is not used in any part of the Constitution. And they even confirm that there is overlap between the constitutional functions of municipalities and provinces. To an extent, there is truth to that statement. But there have been very bold and sincere attempts to resolve, in the spirit of Section 41 of the Constitution, this apparent or what looks like confusion. And it is in that regard that you have your Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act that seeks to define how we relate amongst ourselves as spheres of government. So we agree that this overlap, which they've rightly pointed out, exists at two levels. Exists at the level of your supervisory mandate of the provinces over municipalities. And on the other hand, between the lack of clarity between certain items that have been used in the Schedules 4 and 5 to the Constitution, both in Part A and Part B of both Schedules 4 and 5. So we do agree that there may be overlap in terms of the distribution and allocation of powers between municipalities and provinces. So to that extent, they are proposing way forward. The University of Western Cape has done quite some interesting research. We just want to confirm to the committee that we indeed looked at the body of research conducted by University of Western Cape even before we drafted, in the course of drafting this bill. The presentation was largely based on a particular document which we truly scrutinized, we debated amongst ourselves, and we think to an extent we were followed. They are saying that the bill should provide definitions for planning and land use related functions in Schedules 4 and 5 in order to clarify the confusion regarding the allocation of powers between different spheres. We believe that's what we have done. We believe this bill has carved out spaces to say municipalities do land use schemes, municipalities consider applications this way. Municipalities, when there are decisions that are not agreed to among yourselves in this way, this is how it goes to the province. So we believe what Community Law Center is proposing, we've largely attempted to do most of those things. When they say we should define municipal planning, whilst it is an attractive option in terms of throwing further clarity in this respect, it is not land affairs that will do the whole of definition of municipal planning. We believe that definition will better sit in your Structures Act or your Systems Act as opposed to in the Land Use Management Act. Because land use planning, whilst it is so closely connected with municipal planning, it's only tangentially related to it. It is not conclusively all of it. So to that extent, we note their suggestions. We just believe that it should not ideally sit with our legislation. They said we should designation of matters of provincial interest in 37 and jurisdiction granted in 36 may be unconstitutional intrusion by provinces into municipal planning. Our honorable members, I think it's important to look at this comment, especially from the perspective of the comment we've just discussed from Western Cape. On one hand, Western Cape contends on constitutionality to the extent that they are saying that we have not given provinces enough powers. They said we have interfered in their mandate. They said that the national government is trying to bypass the provinces. But the professors are telling us that we might be doing too much indeed by allowing provinces to even intrude into municipal planning. We believe the truth lies very close to what the professors are saying. To that extent, we are proposing an amendment that duly recognizes the role of the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. We are also trying to remove references to the provincial growth and development strategies, and also at national level to national special development perspective. So as to squarely say that the question of provincial interest will be tied to the constitutional definition of provincial planning. So we'll be suggesting amendments to deal with these particular areas, and we do appreciate the comments in that respect. That tends to balance very carefully the relationship between the provinces and the municipalities and national and all these two other spheres in such a manner that we do not intrude on each other's spaces. My comment already attends to the next one on the designation of matters of national interest. We've already dealt with this by making sure that we do not intrude into each other's space. I think actually the next three the question of NSDP, we have removed it. The PGDS, we've done that, and we've thrown further clarity into what amounts to national provincial interest in that respect. With the central advisor, we are also accepting that clause 73 of the bill may be an overstep of the constitution. So we are proposing that we remove clause 73(2). Sub 2 of 73, which is actually the challenged provision. So we're going to remove 73(2). We've agreed with the statutory advisor that that is indeed desirable, and subject to the direction of this Honorable House, will be at the relevant time be making that suggestion formally in terms of our proposed amendment. 78(4). If you look at 78(4) of the bill, 78(4) of the bill, honorable members, deals with a scenario which talks to capacity. Seventy-eight-four states that if a municipality lacks the capacity, expertise, or resources to consider and decide an application, it must refer such an application to a provincial tribunal for consideration and decision. Capacity is a real issue in practice. And what is important here is that we believe that the Community Law Center may not be reading this section the same way we're reading it, and we will certainly welcome a further opinion from the State Law Advisor. Other members, we are not saying, because their comment seems to suggest that we are saying that the tribunal should take over or must take over from a municipality in the event of lack of capacity. We are saying a municipality on its own, if it makes a determination on its own, so it's a voluntary act. We are only saying that we impose the responsibility on the municipality to say if the municipality makes a determination that they lack the capacity, we believe it should be an obligation on them to do the right thing by escalating it upstairs to the provinces, not to national level, to the provinces, to assist them in doing that. We must be honest that many provinces would love us to make it stronger, to make them able to consider applications from the municipality. So we note their comments. We're only saying that it can be read slightly differently from what the Community Law Center has read into the bill. We had comments from the F.W. de Klerk Center for Constitutional Rights, Advocate Habilon. Honorable members, the Klerk Center for Constitutional Rights notes that we should make sure that balanced social economic needs in land use must take full cognizance of environmental needs. Indeed, we agree. We are only saying that we have made enough references to environmental needs in the bill. In the making of a land use scheme, a municipality is enjoined constitutionally and in terms of this bill to take note of the provisions of Section 24 of the Constitution, and that we've also referred expressly to the provisions of the National Environmental Management Act when a municipality is actually doing a land use scheme. As such, if one looks at clause 50, for instance, clause 52 already says that without derogating from the provisions of the system, clause 51, we said that the land use scheme must be consistent with the National Environmental Management Act. So we believe that we've done what they are asking us to do. Perhaps they read some part of the bill. Even if we look at the directive principles, we believe we've already catered for that. Clause 4(2) of the bill, the Clerk Center for Constitutional Rights, they are saying, if we are reading from the same page, that we should amend it to reconcile land reform with environmental conservation. we've already done that. Environmental conservation, environmental needs, and the protection of environment broadly. We will believe at the right places we've created for it. And public interest, we do not believe we can do, we should do more than we've done at the moment. They are saying in relation to Clause 5, which prescribes, which enables the minister to determine compulsory norms and standards, that the minister should act in conjunction with other ministers, trade and industry, finance, water affairs, forestry, minerals and energy, environmental affairs and tourism. I think it's important to explain the process for norms and standards. If we look at bills or the power of the minister to make norms and standards, will in traditional case, will in any event be exercised only after a draft has been published for public comment. So we do believe that the way government is run, and we will have necessarily consulted with people who will be affected before a regulation is made. Otherwise, we are well aware that in terms of the promotion of Administrative Justice Act, it will be very fatal if there are people who are affected by the regulation, by norms and standards who are not consulted. But we believe that it will not be necessary to legislate or to put it in this piece of legislation that we should act in conjunction or in consultation with other ministers. I think Cabinet has dutifully and rightly entrusted responsibilities onto ministers, and that they are generally accountable in the way and manner the Constitution enjoins them to do. So I think they will act together in any way. The proposal is that change of use relating to agricultural land must be in consultation with the Department of Agriculture. We are saying that there is a bill coming, the Sustainable Utilization and Protection of Agricultural Resources Bill, which deals with this subject. We've also been advised that in the nature of government work, it may take 10 years to reach the Parliament. To that extent, Chair, we are proposing that we amend clauses in the bill to ensure that, I think in terms of clause 44, we are proposing amendments to 44 to ensure that when a land use regulator takes a decision affecting agricultural land, due cognizance is made of the relevant agricultural measures designed by the Department of Agriculture. So we have draft amendments that deals with clause 44 of the bill, and when you request that, we will be taking honourable members through this amendment. Yeah, urban landmark. Honourable members, we have been told by urban landmark that the bill worsens the uncertainty over executive and legislative powers. We note at the moment, honourable members, that there is a lot of uncertainty around where does this power lie, who exercises this power, which institution does what and when. Because of the multiplicity of legislation, so the concern is real that there is uncertainty. But now to say we worsen it, in their presentation, Urban Landmark said, we are making this bill on top of the existing piece of legislation. Honourable members, if that allegation were to be true, we would have been wasting valuable time here. If the allegation is indeed true that this bill is added on top of the existing laws, it's a grievous mistake we are making. We'll be wasting a lot of people's time. But we do not agree. We do not agree because if we look at this bill, we are proposing that certain laws be repealed. We are in section 2, in clause 2 of the bill, saying that where there is a conflict, it should be resolved in terms of 146(2). So it cannot be uncertain. We have clearly said this is what provinces should do, this is what municipalities should do. In this limited instance, this is what national affairs should do. So we do not agree, because it is not true, that we are adding on top of the existing plethora of legislation in this regard. To that extent, if the opportunity exists to explain, perhaps what is required is to explain to our colleagues in urban landmark what exactly we are proposing to do. Perhaps the time the bill was not looked at in the same way it is written. They then said that the bill contains nothing to enable any sphere to address spatial settlement patterns. It's a very serious allegation. Oh, sorry, sir. It's a very serious statement. It is indeed very serious. If indeed the bill contains nothing to address it. If we look at the processes for a land use scheme, if we look at the governance framework, governance system as it is, we have IDP in terms of Section 26 of the Municipal Systems Act. It's a vehicle that contains a number of plans. And that plan then is translated to a special development framework. The land use management scheme is so connected to the special development framework that it would have then said these are the indicative patterns, these are the desired land uses in this area. So it would be very unfortunate if the participation processes that lead to a land use scheme, or let's even take it from the IDP, is such that the municipality is not able to define democratically how its land should be used. And we're saying that the special pattern pre-1994 was a top-down one. A top-down one where somebody sits in Pretoria, tells you where a township should be built. The Fiscal Planning Act allowed that. It was quite drastic provision. It allowed the minister to do those things. This time around, we're not saying the minister in Pretoria or in Cape Town should determine land uses in Vereeniging. We're saying those people there in that community should democratically look at how their land should be used. They must then, through their democratically elected council, determine a land use scheme. We do not believe that the processes and the manner in which we have suggested. If we look at Clause 53 of the bill, it talks to contents of a land use scheme. Because this allegation that the bill contains nothing to enable any sphere address a patent special pattern, with respect, honourable members, it flies in the face of Clause 53(2) of the bill. Because if you look at C, it talks about densities, intensities of use, the type and extent and scale of buildings and structures, layout of buildings, a lot of things that need to be taken cognizance of in a scheme.
But also if you look at 51, we rely on the national spatial planning framework, which should be looking at how to reverse those planning patterns of the past. So if you comply with that national spatial planning framework, you would then have addressed this apartheid. We don't intend that this would be seen to be a legislation that is apartheid in reverse, but it would be broad enough to capture what the intention of the national spatial planning framework is going to be. So we believe that in that way we have tried to address the issue of the apartheid special planning. On the issue that we must deal with some of the complexities of the DFA, which they raised, we believe that the DFA, some of its provisions, because it was an interim arrangements before the constitution was finalized in 1996. It is true that some of the provisions of that interim legislation, the DFA, were actually captured in the Municipal Systems Act, so they are covered in that legislation to a large extent. What we have said, we are proposing here, is that we can accept that some of the elements of the DFA, such as the formalization of the informal settlement, those we can actually lift and consider in the amendments, in the additions, to take those components that we would find useful in this area. In terms of clear guidance to each sphere of responsibilities, I think we have suggested that by structuring this such that it has got the land use committee at the municipal level, the land use tribunal at the provincial level, the land use commission at the national level, that in as far as we're concerned, does cover this area of providing guidelines at its sphere and areas of responsibility. That is our view. In terms of the clear path to repealing the apartheid era laws, what we're saying is that as far as we can repeal some of the laws, we would review the list of the laws to be repealed. But it must be understood that the provinces can be asked to repeal their own legislation, which affects them at their level. We may not be repealing all of those laws, because the provinces have to do that themselves. Once the national legislation is there, they can be encouraged to comply with that national legislation. The issue of the efficient relationship with other planning and environmental legislation, I think we have covered that when we said that in several clauses here, we have made reference to the compliance with the National Environmental Management Act, and we have indicated earlier that sometimes some of the planning legislation may be sitting at various levels, so it will be relevant under the special planning legislation to be able to cover that one. Perhaps you can cover the other one.
The South African National on the question of expedited procedures recommended by Urban Landmark, we are truly taking it on board. We will be suggesting provisions to deal with that. The South African National Biodiversity Institute, they are broadly supportive of the bill. They understand how the bill works. They demonstrated that in their presentation. They are advising that we tied what we have proposed in Part 7 on jurisdiction of national, what affects, in the determination of what is national interest, that we should include the word environmental after the word economy. We are defining the whole of that subplot, and we shall be taking on board a broader view on that. Yeah, the South African Planning Institute. Yeah. The South African Planning Institute made a submission on very broad issues. They note that there is fragmentation of planning functions in government. That is their view, as you said. They have a view. To an extent, there may be truth to that statement. But Chair, the evidence is plentiful, the workers are few. We can do so much. The fragmentation of planning functions in government. The meaning of the word planning itself is contested. Honourable members, so if people note that there is fragmentation, it may be, a correct view, except that to the extent that we are bringing this bill to address quite a number of those ills, we'll be contributing our own quota to solving the problem of fragmentation. And we have been concretely demonstrating how and what we are contributing to the party in terms of dealing with fragmentation. I understand the bill is based on the notion of tiers and not spheres. It's an observation which is interesting. Interesting because we do not believe that this is true. In practice, because tiers has been a word which has been attractive or used in many areas, people may use that word, but it's not because we have not understood the constitutional tenor, the constitutional arrangement of relationships among the spheres of government. So to that extent, we do not believe and we do not accept that this bill is based on notion of tiers. And to the extent that we had a certified bill, to the extent that we continue to engage with the legal experts on what and where we can. I think the Community Law Center have done quite a body of research on powers of spheres, and except to the extent that they noted one in one area, I do not think that they agree with this contention that this bill is based on the notion of tiers and not spheres. But we're open to suggestions if there are specific clauses in the bill which they had views on, but unfortunately we did not have the advantage of those pointers or those references to specific clauses in the bill. Honourable members, SAPI, South African Planning Institute, states that DPLG, that's the Department of Provincial and Local Government, they are already regulating IDPs, SDFs, and land use management schemes as part of a continuum. They are literally saying that we should let DPLG do this. Our chair, this allegation, I'm sorry, this statement, this contention. Yeah. All I remember is, this view that DPLG already regulates IDP, SDF, LUMS, is only a part of the truth. It is not the whole of the truth. When DPLG made the Systems Act, if we read the Systems Act as it is at the moment, it specifically enjoins the municipality to do its SDF in line with the prescriptions of the Development Facilitation Act. The Development Facilitation Act is a piece of legislation administered by the Department of Land Affairs. So, Systems Act expressly recognizes the role and responsibility of Department of Land Affairs to do land. And the interrelationship. The Systems Act also recognizes the role of the Department of Transport to do transport planning. It recognizes water affairs to do water planning. So, that's why I say this truth, or this version of the truth as portrayed by South African Planning Institute, is indeed part of the truth and not the whole of the truth. It is partly untrue to the extent that they also said that they regulate SDF. They point to the need for SDF to be within IDPs. They do not regulate SDF. Both in the Systems Act and the regulations to the Systems Act, they expressly recognize the role of the Department of Land Affairs in this respect. When they talk about land use management systems, in practice, as we speak, the Department of Land Affairs has been supporting many municipalities in doing land use management systems. We've not only sent one body to assist them, we do have deputy directors in all the provinces in the country that does special planning for municipalities. We've gone to Oar Tambo to do it. We are in many provinces in Limpopo at the moment. We are in Northern Cape. We are funding Kimberley Municipality again? Soplaki. So we've also been invited by DPLG, Land Use Management System. We've also been invited by DPLG many times. Vela has attended, Rajesh has attended quite a few. Yeah, we've been attending meetings with DPLG to do what they call IDP review. IDP is like a building. It talks about you need a bed to be able to sleep in a room and a chair, but they don't know how to make those beds, really. They say this room must be a bedroom with a bed. So the issue of the content of IDP is not the competence of DPLG. So that's why I'm saying that this version of the truth, honorable members, is a bit of six blind men of Hindustani. They're only representing what they can see because of the vision they have from that side. We do indeed do land use management systems in land affairs. Concretely, we don't define processes, we define content. So to that extent, we believe this is partly untrue. I've already attended to the view that this bill removes powers from elected officials. The question may be at which power are we talking about. We've referred the honorable members to, I think, clause 47 of the bill. We've read clause 8 of the bill. We can allude to the powers of our premier to appoint our members of the provincial land use tribunal. We can look at clause 7 of the bill that talks about the power of the province to make a determination as to what amounts to provincial interest. And the question of a provincial legislation, which is made by the elected representatives of the people. So it is also a little bit far from the truth that bills remove power from elected officials. It is far from the truth that we represent. They also said the bill does not provide guidance on sustainable utilization of land as a resource. They said it does not recognize the difference between land use management and strategic spatial planning. Chair, when we talk about the word spatial planning, we have a chief directorate in land affairs called Spatial Planning and Information. DPLG has got a chief director, of development planning. In the presidency, they've got chief directors planning. Transport has got chief director transportation planning. When we talk about the word spatial, we talk about space and the planning of space, what exists on space. So water affairs will cannot plan water use except they look at the physical space. Transport cannot be elsewhere. Even flight paths for air transportation. We have a relationship in our department with that. In determining so with respect, the question of the recognition of the difference between land use management and strategic spatial planning, with respect, is a red herring, Chair. It's a red herring because in this bill, when we say that a land use scheme must give effect to the IDP or to the SDF, it is recognizing the connection between the land use management system and the spatial planning system of that municipality. The word SDF is Special Development Framework. And we are also saying that they must align their plan. They must be cognizant of what happens at provincial level. We refer to the provincial growth and development strategy. In practice, the provincial growth and development strategy is the foremost special planning tool at provincial level. Within the PGDS of a province, you have the Special Development Framework, the Provincial Special Development Framework. At national level, you have the National Special Development Perspective. We have referred to this thing in this bill. And with respect, because it's now a one-sided story of the DLA version of the story, the reality is that we almost got the impression that they did not look at this version of the bill. But that's our thing. The said bill does not recognize its impact on diverse pieces of legislation, such as NEMA, if that ought to be true. But this is not true. we have referred to NEMA in this bill. They said Heritage Resources Act. Yeah, the provision of the National Heritage Resources Act caters for limited instances where a building, which is subject of land use, needs to be changed, and it sets out a process there. These are conditions precedent to bringing a land use application to municipalities. We can improve on the wordings at the moment, but to say we do not recognize is quite a very strong view. They say we promote parallel systems. We cannot repeal the National Heritage Resources Act. Neither can we turn it into a chapter into our bill. Same goes for the Water Services Act or the NEMA. But the ideal, the dream, one day is to have a planning and development legislation where you have all these planning items in one legislation. But we have said that we wish to be pointed to a single country in any part of the world with one. You are the Wi-Fi. Western Cape is trying to do a planning and development legislation, but they will still refer to other piece of legislation because it will not, some of them will certainly not be within their mandate. Actually, they have said we confuse the roles by enabling district municipalities to have land use schemes. The way the bill is drafted at the moment, it allows that reading to be possible. It's plausible in terms of the reading of the bill. We certainly must remove that confusion. We are proposing amendments to deal with the question that district municipalities should not be making land use schemes. We will tighten the provisions around 50-51 thereabouts to ensure that only local municipalities and metropolitan municipalities do land use schemes. It crept in at the final editorial stage, but we certainly know that this is the proposition that district municipalities don't make land use.
What's wrong, for instance, in district municipalities?
They are coordinating role. And remember, a district municipality covers a number of local municipalities. Except you have two levels of scheme. The idea is to have a scheme per local municipality. Then the district will ensure that there is alignment among the among the schemes. They can do other instruments. But the land use scheme will just create multiple levels of rights over the same land. So we are proposing that land use scheme truly sits at the local municipality and metro. But district will then coordinate how many locals. Mm-hmm. We have provision that deals with alignment within it. But in practice, that's what happens. Yeah. I don't know.
The assumption is that all municipalities of land use management schemes, and so on. And therefore, there's no role for the municipality to play in a circumstance where, there's a district, municipality, rural, and so on. All municipalities that fall underneath that district municipality, like Kukuni, for instance, which would not even be able to establish this land use scheme regulation.
Chair, you're right. What happens in practice today is that in partnership with DPLG, and as we are, okay, let me put it this way. Last year, the president in the State of the Nation address enjoined us to pilot the land use management bill to test how it works in practice. Even before the presidential announcement on pilots, as we stated, we've been supportive of a number of municipalities. We are quite conscious of the capacity needs at municipal level. We're putting our money there, we're putting the resources there to assist municipalities to build the capacity for land use management system. But in terms of the official and legislative responsibility for land use schemes, as opposed to land use schemes within a land use management system, the land use scheme sits at a local municipality, and then it sits at a metro. But the district then plays a coordinating role. But even in terms of DPLG documents on distribution of powers between local and district, that's recognized. But we can tighten that area at IDP level, but at land use scheme level, it should still remain at land use scheme. But the question of capacity, we're fully aware of it. Even the bill at the moment recognizes the possibility of two municipalities coming together to do that. We can look at that further, Chair. I hope I answered you.
I think I can just add that in terms of that clause number 78, our view was that in terms of addressing the issues of capacity for the local municipalities, we could consider referring that matter up to the provinces than to the district municipalities. I think the issue was that the provinces could have that capacity to deal with those applications that were referred to the local municipality, should the local municipality not have the requisite capacity to deal with that land scheme.
We've attended to the question of, the statement from South African Planning Institute is that the bill does not repeal apartheid era laws and other post-apartheid laws with land use implications. We agree with the premise upon which this statement is based. We agree with the premise that there are apartheid era planning laws and post-apartheid era planning laws which are prime candidates for repeal. Technically, their statement is true that the bill does not repeal all these laws. But the insinuation is that we have the powers to do it, and we're not doing it. What Madija said now also is that we will be doing so much of what we can do. We will then, in fact, in practice and indeed, all the provinces are at different stages of the enactment of their provincial legislation on this subject. And all the provinces are going to repeal what we are not repealing. So, Chair, as soon as this law is passed, the provinces will certainly be enjoined to develop their own provincial legislation. That interaction is, Gauteng is at different stages. Western Cape has got a bill. KZN has advanced. Northern Cape has got. They've all got different bills. What we are saying is that we will repeal the national level. They will repeal the provincial level. Any law that is not repealed will, in terms of 44(2)(1), read with section 146(2) of the Constitution, will have no effect. They will be dummies in the statute book. They will surely not be. They will not be. Nobody will be able to rely on them as long as they create parallel systems. And we will stand by that view. So while the statement is technically true, the insinuation and the impact of it is it's not as they wish it to be. Chair, they said the bill does not provide direction to provinces, especially on the bill of provincial ordinances. We are proposing, we will find a way to craft this possibility into the bill. But Chair, we must say that in earlier versions of the bill, we had expressly stated the need to rationalize this bill. In comments we received up to late last year, they said the thing, and which we agreed with, is that in order for provinces to repeal their legislation, we do not need to legislate that. We do not necessarily need that. They know it, they have to repeal it. The statement is already embedded in the application of this law as a section 44(2) of the Constitution, already section 146(2). So, when they say we do not provide direction, we'll find a way to deal with it. But what they wish that the provinces should repeal their ordinances, it will indeed happen. They are then suggesting that a national special planning law be introduced. Their last suggestion also is that the country needs planning and development legislation, not a land use management law. Chair, in our presentation on this bill, we have stated that land use or special planning, land use in relation to special planning, has got at least three elements, apart from the political element of the settlement patterns in this country and the history of segregation and let's call it dislocation, which were used basically through planning legislation. The reality is that you cannot have this idealistic special planning law, which is more to address economic development. We're saying that spatial planning would have its economic angle, its social angle, its environmental angle. But the key thing also is the political angle of this question we're dealing with. And what is not said is this question of spatial planning is more, if we refer to the national spatial development perspective, as to this question of our areas of potentials, and we do not want to go into that. But the reality is that we need a land use management law. We would not agree with that premise that we do not need a land use management law. And it's an attempt to subordinate, to reduce the role of land use management to a greater developmental goal. And we're not doubting that, but we're not there yet. The same principle of devolution can be adhered to. We believe that the space is big enough for devolution to happen. We're not a big brother, but we can be our brothers. We can be each other's brothers, keepers, sisters, keepers, as spheres of government, as opposed to controlling. So when they are saying that we should do a principle of devolution, that we should give the power to municipalities, we are indeed giving power to municipalities to do land use schemes, to do this. But we are saying that they can do that, but we cannot watch over each other to ensure that we all make sure that we are doing what we ought to do. Otherwise, we can have a confederal system where we have only municipalities and there is no role for national government. But what we believe that we can devolve, still retaining some powers for the national sphere and the provincial sphere. They said there is a national treasury study on rationalization of the planning and regulatory system, that it should be implemented to regarding the overhaul of the planning system. Chair, this study, we have it. We have the recommendation. To the extent that it's feasible, we have implemented the recommendation. To the extent that study also says that the ideal thing is a single planning legislation, we're saying that it is an ideal, we're not there yet. So we participated in this study, we gave our input, and it is not exactly true that we have not looked at this study as if we rejected it. We were part of it. Yeah. Chair.
Perhaps before we could proceed, lunch is ready. So I would suggest that we break for lunch and continue afterwards. Is that accepted?
I say it would appear that lawyers, if they want to fight, they will fight over the use of any word. So we will continue to seek to bring clarity into what we mean by what we say. But the words, by their very nature, they sometimes do have meanings, and those meanings are always subject to contest, especially by those legally trained. But we believe that we have not used words which are going to do violence to this environment. So we believe many of the words can be defined and can be used in normal, can be understood. They say we require better alignment with other laws. We'll continue to do that. We've done that in the bill. As you said, we'll bring in the IDR Framework Act, and we'll look at the bill again, and I believe we will make references where appropriate. Okay, something has also advised us that there is need for greater innovation and progressiveness in the bill. They have referred to previous research done. Okay, in terms of the DFA, the Development Facilitation Act was enacted in 1995. I think Chapter 2 also of the DFA called for the establishment of a Development and Planning Commission. The Development and Planning Commission produced a green paper in 1998. When they say we should build on previous research done, And they gave the example of the Development and Planning Commission. They're saying that we must take advantage of the research done and produced by the Planning Commission in 1998. Based on that research that was done in 1998, a white paper, which is an official government position, was issued in 2001. We do believe, Chair, and we can safely report to the others that this bill is based on that research. This bill is based on the white paper, which was based on that green paper. So we, if we get a director areas of the report of the commission, I would love to be advised. But yeah, we must note that the Development and Planning Commission, as well as the White Paper on Land Use, have made some recommendations that there should be a single national legislation. It says the Minister of Land Affairs has the functional mandate for land. Some of those promises are lofty ideals, but constitutionally some of them will be difficult to defend. Like say that this mandate is exclusively national. So we have since realized that while some of the recommendations are in practice desirable, they indeed may not be feasible in reality. So we have looked at it. We will continue to be guided by this body of research, as they have said. Chair, the solidarity, they came under the guise of Institute for Constitutional and Labor Law Studies. Yeah. They said the bill does not adequately describe words such as public interest. We have reconsidered our position, but we have reached the same conclusion as we had before. We truly ask ourselves, do we need to define public interest? Our advice is that public interest, even in the Constitution when it comes to Section 25, is defined not in a very, it's defined in an inclusive fashion to say it includes so and so. Defining public interest may have the tendency of closing it to what we know, but it's a very broad term. We do not propose to define it. Imbalances of the past. We wonder why we need a definition of imbalances of the past. We deliberated on this. We do not think that the word imbalances of the past in relation to land use, in relation to spatial patterns, in relation to desegregation are not known. We do not think there is need to legislatively define them. They have they are still direct symptoms of these imbalances of the past in memory for it to require definition. And they talk about balanced economic development. These are very nuanced terms, Chair, and we do not propose to define them. We've attended to the question of the bill not being legislation envisaged in terms of 44.2. The third clause 5 is an intrusion into the power of other spheres. Chair, in the course of their presentation, I think it became apparent that whilst their angle was constitutional law, it would appear that they did not sufficiently look at this area of planning law. Otherwise, if they did, they would not be talking about clause 5 intruding into the powers of other spheres. But we've looked at 5 again. We do believe that the minister is truly empowered to make norms and standards, and she will not require, there is no constitutional danger in that respect, Chair. That's how we feel.
Are you going to suggest any provisions for consultation?
We believe that the bill, as it is, if you look at the section of the bill on regulation, you might please. Sorry, the bill as it is enjoins consultation.
But it cannot be assumed.
We can look at that again, but we do believe that if we look at the clause on regulation, which is they are talking about clause 5.
Yeah.
But clause 72 of the bill, 72.1b says the minister may make regulations consistent with this act prescribing national norms and standards, policies and guidelines. Norms and standards are technically regulations, and they must be published as draft before they can be adopted. So we do believe that it will be consulted upon in terms of, since it has the status of regulation.
We'll
take your advice, Chair. The South African Constitutional and Property Rights Foundation, CAPE. They advised us. They said the bill will not achieve its objectives unless entry costs on used and unimproved land is eliminated and replaced with annual user charges like rates and taxes. Chair, we take note of this advice. We do believe that there are serious issues to be considered around the question of rates and taxes. Perhaps Minister Manuel's department would be better suited to implementing this idea better. But in terms of land use, we do not believe that we have regulated or we have imposed entry costs into access to land. And as this bill does not deal with ownership, it's quite difficult for us to bring on board the suggestions around elimination of taxes or the introduction of rates and taxes in land. It's a money matter which the Constitution deals with differently in terms of who can bring legislation on tax and financial matters. Chair, P.E. Clanson wrote in, wisely repeated the earlier comments that there is need for efficient relationship with other planning and environmental laws, which is lacking in the bill. We do believe we have not been, it's not lacking. There are areas we can tighten, and we'll be suggesting amendments in one or two areas to tie planning to environment, but there's limits to which we can do. We've also dealt with the question of repeal of apartheid area planning laws. Chair, P. Clanson lastly noted that the bill may not be wholly applicable to the Western Cape. Chair, in terms of Clause 76 of the bill, we have proposed that a municipality may request the minister to declare by notice in the Gazette that the whole or part of the provisions of this act not applicable to that municipality for a stipulated period. The request must be fully motivated and prescribed. The Chair, if indeed we are told which part of this bill does not suit Western Cape, we'll be willing to engage on those. We have not been told. We are not aware of those parts of this bill which will be inapplicable or inappropriate in Western Cape. If we are told, we can look at those. But indeed, if there are good grounds that has escaped us and on merit requires that a municipality to be exempted from the provisions of this act, we have created a framework for seeking that exemption. As you said, that DFA was not implemented in the Western Cape. It is still in operation in all the other provinces. So what may appear to be only inapplicable may not be objectively truly inapplicable. May be a question of people's preferences, and I think it's a decision that the House must take whether or not it should be applicable or not. But we are saying that the bill should be applied nationally. If there are indeed grounds for seeking exemption, we have created a framework for that. Chair, I believe we are getting close to the end of it. There is an input by Mr. Francois Tunison. Chair, this person is the registered town and regional planner. He's a master in town and regional planning. Chair, this comment mirror to a very large extent what Western Cape has said. this person is also based in Western Cape. Western Cape, or the office of the Premier, the comments are almost, if we look at Western Cape comments and what Sister Chinnison has said, everything has been said. It has said that the housing-based principles, we've attended to that, we have addressed 6 hours on that this morning. It says elected officials who've explained the incorrect premise upon which this statement was based. It talks about encroachment on provincial powers. We've addressed that. It talks about forward planning. We've done that. And, Chair, it talks about tires and not fares. We've done that. It talks about the distinction between 146 and 44. This bill not being a 44-2 legislation. It then adds that the bill proceeds from the incorrect belief in the need for national standardization. Chair, the reality is that Section 44 of the Constitution exists for that purpose, if certain conditions are met. That's why, in a number of areas, the Constitution says to do economic unity, minimum standards for the delivery of certain services. The Constitution says that if certain conditions are met, you can actually introduce national standards. So we do believe that the bill will contain enough justification to motivate why this bill is a Section 44 through legislation and why we need minimum standards to do land use. The landowners, Agri-SA. Agri-SA, No. They said we should align this bill with the sustainable utilization and protection of agricultural resources, super bill. Yeah, we've had very interesting and extensive engagements with our colleagues in our sister department of agriculture. Over the years, we've assisted each other in refining wordings in the two bills. We believe we're aligned. In fact, the political decision was taken by our principal that we should bring the two bills at the same time. We waited for some time, but we just couldn't wait any longer. We had to come here this time around. But I'm sure they are coming soon. But we are aligned, Chair. I can report on that. We also said that the protection and management of agricultural land must remain with Department of Agriculture and not with land use regulators as suggested with the bill. Chair, it depends on what we understand by land use regulators and what they do. We are saying this bill proceeds from the premise that all land must be subject to land use schemes. We've also stated that land use schemes must be informed by special development framework. It will be informed by the IDP. That's at vertically in that, within that sphere. Horizontally, the land use scheme must also be consistent with provincial policies and national policies. So if you have the Sustainable Utilization and Protection of Agricultural Resources Bill, or within the current framework, and as the court judgment confirmed last Friday, 25th of July, in the Starwood judgment on Act 70 of 1970, we believe the Minister of Agriculture, by the Department of Agriculture, would still manage the protection or management of agricultural land. They would still do that. Their determination and their management will actually be recognized and it will sit within the land use scheme. The land use scheme will be a vehicle through which the protection of and management of agricultural land, like many other land uses, will be maintained. We have not designed a framework that says that land use, municipalities should make determinations around the possible uses of land, which is divorced from a determination made by the Minister of Land Affairs. Of course, there may be instances where a municipality has a different vision of land, but as the sphere closest to the people, we believe that they are all part and parcel of the national development discussion. So they should be able to factor in this agricultural land into their planning. Chair, we are called upon to define land development, or questions were asked around what is covered with land development. Chair, development on land. We have a definition of land development in this bill. And we're saying it includes any measure aimed at or likely to have the effect of commencing, establishing, or maintaining improvements on land. Of course, it will include agricultural matters. We do not envisage development to go on agricultural land exclusive of what the municipality approves, because the land will be within a municipal area, since we have a wall-to-wall municipality. It's just how do we read all the policies together to achieve synergy, so that there's no silo development of the use of land development. But we believe that land development is quite inclusive here, and we do not intend to alter its change the way they have suggested. We've been advised also by Agresi that objects of the bill should include rural development, economic growth, the promotion of natural resources, and the maintenance of food production. Here we have no disagreement with the principle, with the substance of what they are suggesting. The extent to which this bill can do that may not be as direct as other pieces of legislation designed for that. This bill can contribute to food production, but it will not be designed to achieve food production. But if we look at the directive principles, Chair, the directive principles in this bill, in more than one place, recognizes all these issues. Clause 4 of the bill. The question of rural development, clause 3 talks about economic growth. We talk about the achievement of land reform objectives in clause 3. The question of protection of natural resources. Clause 4(1)(d) talks about natural resources, natural, environmental, and cultural resources. So we believe we have dealt with it. The object was not read together with the directive principles. If they had been, maybe this comment would have been understood. We are on the same ground with them. We agree with them, and we've only done it. Maybe not where they would have wanted to say. The directive principle is to inform. If we look at clause 14, clause 44(1)(a), for instance, we're saying that a land use regulator, in considering and deciding an application, a land use regulator must be guided by the directive principle. So it will be not consistent with this bill when it's denied for a land use regulator to close its eyes to what is informed. We cannot keep repeating it in each and every place in the bill about this. But we are saying that the directive principles permeate the whole bill in the development of land use skills, in taking each application. And we can safely assure you that this object guide, and somebody can challenge a decision that is not consistent with the directive principles. We've taken advice on the minister, on consultation regarding ministers, on ministers' determination of norms and standards, and we'll be proposing amendments on that. They expressed a concern around the expertise and capacity of municipalities to fulfill the envisaged function as municipal land use regulator. Chair, in this chapter 2 of this bill, clause 6, 7, is specifically designed to, as I said, to not a big brother, but for all the players to be each other's keeper. So the question of capacity and expertise hopefully should be addressed when we look at the capacity building measures that the role of the national government in doing capacity building, support, monitoring, and review, as well as the provinces. These are constitutional obligations. The constitution enjoins everybody to protect and fulfill these promises the constitution has made to our people. So we do believe that this will be done. Furthermore, Chair, if we look at clause 78.4 of the bill, section 78.4 of the bill then says that if a municipality lacks capacity, infrastructure, or resources, it can escalate a land use decision upstairs to the province to assist it. Chair, in addition to that, Clause 19 of the bill specifically even says that a municipality may agree with another municipality because of lack of capacity, and both of them or more than one can then say, no, let's do this together. Maybe Johannesburg can then agree with Mohale City to say, well, why do we need separate approving authorities? Why don't we come together? But this must be their own agreement. And so we're saying here that this concern around capacity, it's recognized. And in more than one way, we are alive to it and we have proposed measures to deal with it. Chair, they said, to what detail, this is a question that Agrese is asking. They said, to what detail and extent will the land use scheme to prescribe land use? I think their concern was how particular can a land use scheme be? Land use schemes are, to an extent, broad. But if we look at what the land use scheme covers, it will cover the whole municipal land, the whole land in the municipal, from a geographic space, it will cover the whole municipal area geographically. It will determine the use. It will also have mixed uses, possible uses. I mean, it has of schemes. So it's not. And within those schemes, there are realizations here and there. And if we look at clause 33 of the bill, clause 33 then allows somebody to then come to do subdivision, consolidation, to bring an application to amend the land use scheme. So there are quite a lot that can be done in terms of the extent. So I think if the fear is about rigidity or over prescription, we must remember that land use schemes are results and are products of a consultative process by the community itself. Before bylaws are made, the intention to promulgate a land use scheme will have been circulated in terms of the system, and it can be challenged on the basis of it not having been published for public comments or affected users. There's an elaborate process of community involvement in the examination of land use schemes. We're told that we should consider in clause 53.1d to introduce the Conservation of Agricultural Resources Act. Chair, we believe in the right places. We have created a mechanism for the protection of agricultural land by calling that all measures designed to protect the sustainable use of agricultural land must be respected by land use regulators. We do not believe we need to expressly mention this. And as we have stated, the Conservation of Agricultural Resources Act is one of the pieces of legislation that will be repealed by the Sustainable Utilization and Protection of Agricultural Resources Bill. So we need not mention it. We have already, to a greater extent, drawn that relationship between the proposed super bill and this bill, and we will be proposing amendments to further enhance the protection of agricultural land, and we need not mention this specifically. It is not my intention to be blank to what the traditional leaders have said. But lastly, we are saying that we have listened to the traditional leaders. We've looked at the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act. We've looked at the Municipal Systems Act, Municipal Structures Act. We've looked at the constitutional definition of the powers of traditional leaders. And we do believe that there are good grounds to recognize the roles of traditional leaders in land use management. We have looked at the crux of the proposals of our traditional leaders is the recognition of roles of traditional leaders in determination of land use schemes, in ensuring that the powers that exist of traditional leaders to determine uses of land within their domain are recognized and are not lost. We are now saying that we have listened to all these calls, we've read through this, and in ensuring that we factor it into the bill, we are going to be suggesting specific clauses to ensure that the right of traditional leaders to participate in the deliberations of the municipality when deciding a land use scheme is given effect to, subject to the views of the House. We've got proposed amendments on that. We are also saying that since areas within traditional councils are part of municipalities and the constitutional responsibility for land use schemes rests with municipalities, in addition to the participation role of traditional leaders in municipalities and in municipality dissemination of land use schemes, we should also create a scenario that tallies with what is in clause 48 of the bill to ensure that, okay, we'll be proposing amendments to clause 47 of the bill. And we're saying that regarding clause 48 of the bill, a sub-scheme must also be possible in an area that is within a traditional council. So in that way, we believe that we will have fitted the key essence of the proposals of traditional leaders into this bill. That will be all in terms of our responses to the public submissions on the land use management bill. I don't know if my DG wants to add to that.
I think we have adequately covered the ground.
Okay. Welcome, Honorable Valamisa. Charlie is a common. Charlie is a common. So he was seated there. No drop of royal blood flows in you. Thanks, TG and Sunday. State law advisor. So, members, that is the response of the department to what we had last week. I don't know if we we have questions for clarity or would want to engage the department in terms of the process of deliberating on the actual formulations that they are suggesting.
Before why the, my colleagues are still thinking in terms of the approach from now. As a general comment, you know, when I was just sitting here, I said to myself, since I came in this parliament, I served on a number of committees, from provincial and local government, defense, energy and energy, you mentioned. I've never seen a situation where you have to make sure that each and every presentation there's an amendment needed. Shocking. Very shocking. I've counted in terms of what they stipulated. If you listen to them, each and every presentation needs amendment. So it means you are rewriting the whole bill. I might be wrong, but that is my assessment when I'm listening here. And I'm wondering whether it's a state law advisor or department, why is this done so badly? If I have to give a mark, they'll have 1 out of 10. I'm telling you, it's shocking. Very shocked. I thought I might just take that general remark. I was just counting in terms of the submission here. Each and every comment in submission, they will have an amendment. Even the last day, the one, you see, they told us last time that they had a workshop with the traditional leadership, where the traditional leadership was happy here and there. But now today, we're told that they have to amend this and that to accommodate traditional. When they had their workshop in Durban, and they should have, well, before it was published in April, they should have inserted these things because they had a full workshop with them. They didn't see fit to touch them. Now, because we are here, they are beginning to say, okay, no, maybe we have made a mistake. Let's this and that, that and do that. What did we do? We had a 2 days workshop with them. 2 days workshop. You know? Where I think this question of transmission has came in a day. Is it not in fit? I'm really disappointed. Thank you.
No, I think, in fact, that's where I was, because I was asking myself questions as to if indeed you consulted, and this thing that was presented here last week, why at the point of consultation, you know, we have not responded to them? Because we will not be where we are today. Of course, I agree with you. We will have to redraft the bill, and I think that's the third part. I remember when I was in communication, we had a similar problem. But at least on their part, they did do a lot of consultation. But this thing of redrafting is a problem. The bill comes here in black, it comes out blue. So.
Thank you very much, President. There are many areas that I've marked, but I just want to deal with the last one. The contra letter one. Talk about amendments that they have made in connection with what was said by the traditional leaders. I've observed that you have remarked when you came to this one. But let me put it blunt. To me, this means belittling the traditional leaders. Nothing that they've said appears to be sufficient when everybody seems to be. And nothing that you do appears. I don't know whether it was purposely done or it was an oversight. I don't know. But I want to state it categorically clear that we won't be able to address this issue of traditional leaders and the amendments that we are making unless it shows on this document what is it that we are addressing that they have said. Because they are here to stay. They are going nowhere. It's our tradition. Let me be blunt again. We say we are going to respect their position. Maybe Udali, when he said the owners of the land, was referring to them. But he hastened to say it when AfriSA inputs were mentioned. I just wanted to say that chapter 6. Let's deal with our traditional leaders the proper way, not the way that shows belittling them. What they have said must appear on this document. Like anybody else, and what we are saying must also appear. As it is now, really to me, if I had made input on behalf of the church, I would have loved what I said to appear on the and are this very fair to ourselves? If we don't respect ourselves, we will never be able to respect anybody else. And if we don't respect our traditional leaders, it means we are not respecting ourselves. In a tradition, a scenario, because of our traditional leaders. They inherit the traditions that were happening in the bed because there's an Ndebele chief that is looking at the Ndebele tradition. And that is how it is going to be. Ukuyibeka nje izwakale ukuthi ake sibahloniphe ukuze sikwazi ukulwa lempi yomhlaba. Angizidlulela kwezinye thephethele, ngizokuma nje khona lapho. I'm saying this also because I'm also born of the traditional leader's son. I'm a prince of Ubona.
How do we proceed from here? Because we've got unfinished business in front of us. And we must finish that as quickly as possible if we want to proceed. And we cannot proceed before we don't have that in writing in front of us.
And what I suggest is that we reduce the work of the presenter to legislative language. So we know exactly what's in front of us, and if we then accordingly can take positions and see what to do. And that we should give the department a chance to rewrite it, put it in front of us as quickly as possible, so that we can to continue to be this. Trying to find when we should do, and how long it will take them to do that. Because that is not an easy job.
I'm leader.
You don't have anything. Mm. That's saying, yes, you can.
friends that you can meet, you can stay there. I don't know where are we actually in the system. You said you are dealing with the informal settlement. People who left where I'm talking about in the world. We're going to give them the paper and we need us out.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Well, mine is just a comment. I sort of understand why the department came up with the designation that pretends the institution of traditional leadership has been declared. Because the constitution itself is ambiguous. Local government, which is very key to land use, is one that is given a responsibility to deal with the land use matters, such as what you need to do. And there's no significant reference to the institution of tribalism in that part of the constitution. Even if you look at the chapter 33, you'll find that 33.2 talks about the application for township establishment. Townships are associated with the black settlements. They're located close to the cities and towns. Clearly, they didn't even envision the application of this act in areas which are away from the urban areas. Because they would have said something like rural village or something like that. But nonetheless, my understanding is that the purpose of public submissions to Parliament is exactly to assist Parliament to find flaws that are in bills that emanate from the department. I don't think you can lambast them that much. Because what would have been the purpose of calling, in addition to the consultation that they held with relevant stakeholders, what would be the point of us as Parliament calling the same stakeholders if the intention was not to make sure that there will be instances where new amendments in terms of rights. They didn't give me a vote on this request. That's just my observation.
No, well, your position is different from ours.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chair.
Let me come back to their presentation now. I just want to check with the department. You know, if you look at clause 35, restricting conditions, they are proposing to delete sub clause 4, 5, and 2. Because if you look at their proposal, they are saying on page 14 of this document that they circulated to us, land use management proposed amendment. I suppose they deleted amendment to set submission or proposal revocation. Find that from B, C, and D, they're omitting those sub clauses. And E and F, they're omitting 5 and substitute 2, omitting 6 and substitute 3. But if you read that clause 35 closely, see, these clauses are sort of interlinked. And, for example, if you look at sub clause 4, which has been omitted, substituted at this stage, it said an award in terms of subsection 3 B shall be deemed to be and shall have the effect of judgment of a civil court having jurisdiction. Go further down in terms of sub 5, clause 5, I'm not going to read those, but in terms of this submission, it seems to me that they are in fact deleting this sub-clause. And we need to have some more real explanation on this. The other issue that I want to check with them, in terms of the submissions made by the public here, is an issue which they have not dealt with extensively or in my own view convincingly, in terms of this Land Use Committee.
this land use committee has been coming up now and again. The other issue in terms of community law center, Western Cape University, the overlapping between the spheres of government. I thought that when they deal with that one, they will also remind us about that friend of court that came before us. Because they refer us correctly to clauses of the Constitutional Court judgment, particularly on articles 69 and 79, where the Constitutional Court says there that there is no reason why the two spheres cannot coexist. I thought they are going to pick up something there in terms of enriching, you know, this bill, in particular addressing that particular issue. Because, as I said earlier, that the problem of the three spheres of government, they both always fight about power. Power, power, power. There's another area which has been raised by the question of the alignment of, that is the Department of Finance and Economic Affairs, Department in Gauteng. Bill requires better alignment with other laws. Now, this alignment sometimes is creating a problem, because I'm sure when they were trying to amend the issues which it was dealing, or which is dealing with the traditional leadership, of course, they continuously, collectively, of course, referred to the Framework Act. I'm sure they are trying to make that alignment. But there are other laws which I think they need to look at it in terms of this particular alignment. Because sometimes when you come to the implementation of this act, when it's acted, sometimes it creates a problem. That's why I always refer to Clara. That Clara, when we amend, we dealt with Clara, we are all happy, gloom, and all those things, including the traditional leaders of course, when we dealt with Clara. Clara has been, you know, getting dark somewhere, because it cannot be implemented. And unfortunately, your colleague who has left working for another department now, when he came before, he confirmed that they can't implement that Clara, because there's a serious problem in terms of implementation. But I'm talking about this alignment, you know, that this alignment is critical, which I think that they need to deal with that too. I come to say, I'm sure you referred to super, you know, which I maybe said it might only have take another 10 years before it comes through. But if you look at Agri SA, they referred to that thing, that it should be aligned with that one. We don't know at this stage, you know, how is that super looks like. I cannot comment on that because I don't know how it looks like. Hoping that in terms of the, since it is drafted by them too, they'll be able to make that alignment correctly, so that when even that one comes before us, if we are still here, comes before us, we are then able to cross-reference with the other legislation concerned. The other issue that I want to raise is, I think, you know, this question of undue delay, it was raised, and which was raised with a reference to the appeal. There was a clear recommendation of appeal that they must be specific. To say, if you delay, how long this delay are you talking about? What this undue delay are you talking about? Well, it's not specific. I'm not saying it must be specific in each and every area, but at least they understand it. If I take, for example, there was a presenter that came from ECNP who said the application has been sitting for the past 9 years. Huh? Yeah, 9 years. 9 years. Hey, can't you? You see, this thing reminds me the thing that was in the news this morning, even yesterday. The court bomb. That poor woman took court, the government to court, and he won. But he died without even having a house. You know, he died without even having a house. I'm talking about these delays. Because I remember when he took this matter to court, it was 95-96, where he got this judgment, Constitutional Court. 95-96. Now, talk about 2008. I'm just making an example about that. As I said,
the same to us.
We are saying we are lawmakers. It's the same to us. Sunday is the same to us. We are lawmakers, we make law, and you guys don't implement. You know, this reminds me when we were in oversight, in I always refer to the Northwest. You know, when you went there. Unfortunately, you were already came back. When you went to, what did you say, the last place? No, there's the AC which is close to that, yeah, when we were there. You know, I was shocked that these functionaries that came there, there were about 20 cars. Each functionary had a car. 20 cars coming to a farm which is dead. With a car farm which is dead. 20 cars. Do you know when I was asking one official about that? They said the reason why they were doing that, because they're going to claim. Is it SMP?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, they're just milking. They've got a phone to claim. They can't give a lift to another one. Because God wants them to claim. They have all to claim. I mean, they didn't see anything wrong with that. Though we are cramped in a kumbi, ourselves, as lawmakers, you know. We are cramped in a kumbi, and they came with nice cars, you know. So the show came. I don't know, man. Let me see that. No,
it's nice to be a
functionary. No, it's really so nice. But the reality of the situation is that it's going to affect even them, when it comes to elections. If the ANC doesn't get the majority that it is heading today, the DA will fire all of them. They don't understand. That is, the DA will fire them, because the DA knows that sometimes they are useless. We fire all of them, and employ their own cronies too. The other issue here, they raised an issue in terms of the district council. I think it was under the Karaskan Planning Institute. The bill confuses roles by enabling district councils to have land with skills. The issue that was raised there is that the district council is a coordinating staff, and therefore they are coordinating on behalf of the various local councils under that district. That they don't need that. I was just sitting here saying to myself, I hear what they are saying, but in most cases, not only in terms of capacity, in most cases, those district councils have got a role and a responsibility and a duty to perform. Let's take an example, the poor rural area. That is your Eastern Cape, your Limpopo, your Mpumalanga, and Free State. You find that the district councils that are there, they're supposed, in terms of the Structures Act, they're supposed to operate as metro councils, in terms of their which is, though they may not have the status of the metro. But in terms of the finances and resources and capacity, that's it. This is the issue that was raised by Honorable Olumisa here, in terms of the village. In terms of this area that I've mentioned, we have got the local authorities, like, let's say, Tolo, for example. You know, how on earth they're going to make it to have the world? Sometimes other local authorities have got five officials. In a local authority, five officials only, no everybody else. Of course, the area is vast, but because they don't have resources, they don't have tax base, they can't employ more than 10. They have to have five or six. Now, if they've got five or six, who's going to be a land use scheme the committee there? Nobody. Really nobody. So that's the reality of the situation. You know. The issue that's raised by Comrade Malidia, in terms of the CTOs, I was just whispering with the chief here. I'm not sure, because my understanding with the wall-to-wall local government, that there is no place that is not under any local authority, in terms of the wall-to-wall.
I was just imagining, in terms of those errors that they were classified then, whether in the implementation of the system test, they were not integrated within the local authority. Because, you see, that is why, in my understanding, the structure has created a situation where the traditional leadership will sit as observers in local authorities. They are not integrated. They are their observers in terms of the local authority. So I was assuming that, of course, those areas, they are under the jurisdiction of one or two, whatever, the local authorities. Maybe you can address us on that particular issue. The Silicon Institute Property Rights Foundation, they raised the question of unused and unimproved land. In terms of the land use management field, maybe you should have addressed us. I don't know, maybe I didn't mix it. I don't know. Maybe there was like other veterans calling us here. That may, perhaps, how do you really invested dealing with that particular issue? Because the critical issue again goes back to the clause 33 that has been prepared here on the township. That, you see, we always look in terms of the urban area. We don't think about rural areas. How do you think that can be implemented, the area that can really effectively deal with the villages as referred to? You know, we still have to come back to the land affairs in terms of other issues, which are still have been raising for the past 5 years. I'm not in that, but I won't deal with that, but we're dealing with this thing now. The last issue, yeah, let me end that in terms of my comment. The presenter dealt extensively with Section 44 of the Constitution, and they also referred to Section 154, if I'm correct. They were dancing there, really dancing there, which I thought would be, Section 154, Subsection 1 of the Constitution. They were really dancing there. I thought maybe in terms of your response, we'll cover that part, and also Section 44, Subsection 1A, Roman Sica 6. They also dealt with that one in terms of their presentation, which I thought you will assist us to understand how to intend dealing with that particular issue. The intervention area. When you're dealing with these submissions, I didn't hear you dealing with this particular issue. Because it was really an area where there was a serious concern on intervention. I even remember when I asked the other chef that came before us in terms of how they think that you can deal with that particular issue. That's what I'm saying. If I didn't listen to you, my apologies. I think that one is under the intervention. No, for another section, 6784 or 7807 or something else. So they also dealt with that, the transitional provision. And also, I thought maybe you should have addressed us on that one. How do you think you can deal with that one? Because there was also a concern. I can't remember which presenter that raised that issue. In terms of the period, that as the bill is drafted, it seems as if there will be abuse of something. I don't know, I can't remember which presenter, but there was they raised that particular issue in terms of the transitional provision. Let me end there, Chair, before we decide another one. Thank you very much.
Okay. On page 13 of the agreement, restrictive conditions. Can you please explain that again? I thought you said they are removing this, or I didn't hear you correctly. What is it that you are saying you are doing?
The issue of the 3 year terms that was raised by the City of Johannesburg, can we recap on that point? They raised the concern about the term of office. The other issue was raised by the Committee Law Center, the investor working case, on the conduct of committee members. But this reference to the Municipal Systems Act, it could be an antiquated reference given the thing of public service legislation that is in the pipeline. How are we addressing the problem? Okay, so
I will try to respond to the issues that are raised. Yeah, on the matter of the amendments, it is true that the main there are few main amendments which would, for example, include the issue of the traditional leaders, which we are proposing to cover under clause 47 and 48. It's one of the significant amendments that we're talking about. Otherwise, the rest of these amendments are consequential amendments. They may appear to be very, very many, but they are consequential amendments. It's also a sign that you have taken the inputs from the people that have made presentations in the hearing seriously. So it's, to me, it's not a bad finding itself. The issue about contra lesa, it is not. If we created an impression that because of that blank space around contra lesa, we did not cover the issues of contra lesa, I think that is that is not the case, because we do have about three pages that we were screening of the issues that we have covered under contra lesa, and as such, in the other paper which is entitled Proposed Amendment, on page 14, we have captured the issues that relate to the traditional leaders. So we also recognize and regard it as very important that those should be covered in terms of this legislation. That's why we are talking about the proposed amendments of page 47 and 48 to include and capture the role of the traditional leaders in this. The issue of the capacity of the municipalities and the provinces. We know that this is a general problem, and one could even extend it to all the spheres of government. That is a matter of the capacity of the government to for service delivery. Is an issue that has been in focus. If you look at the report of the DPSA around the capacity of the state to deliver, this matter has been raised. In fact, in this legislation, the reason why we are talking in this bill about the issue of the transitional provisions on Section 78, where we are talking about the inability of some of the municipalities to perform, that we can refer to the provinces, the tribunal that can actually assist in areas, in cases where the municipalities are lacking in capacity. We are saying this is a matter, it may not be common with all of the municipalities. We hope that there will be a limited use of this referral to provinces. But the fact of the matter is that it was the realization of the fact that capacity is a serious issue to consider. in the implementation of this legislation, and we are saying that we have recognized that in these provisions on the issue of the informal settlements. We would concede that perhaps we have not referred to the rural areas, but in our response we have said that when we talk about the land use schemes, they will operate in all the areas, not only in the municipal or town areas. If we need to lift the issue of the rural areas or the communal areas, we are saying that we would be open for that guidance if you give us that guidance. But the fact of the matter is that the intention of the legislation was to cover not only the town areas, but also the rural areas. This is precisely why we have considered to the role of the traditional leaders in this. I just wanted to go back to the fact that on the redrafting, we're saying that to answer the Honorable Van Niekerk, is that we were looking at this and we're saying that if we're going to look at those amendments that we are suggesting, we could be able to present those tomorrow, those areas, to look at the actual wording of what we're talking about. Yeah. The intention today was to look at what have we done about the presentations that were there, and that was the basis of our presentation today. So if the committee guides us, we can be able tomorrow late morning to be able to share the specific amendments that are there. Perhaps we can cover the other questions which relate to from Mr. Lai.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, I just thought perhaps I should address because it's not once we've had this reference to when we use the word township, what do we mean? Colloquially, there is a meaning that is normally ascribed to the word township. Because I am sure we all had this imagery of township from, I'm going to a black area, I call it a township, and I'm going to a white area, I call it a town. But that's not how the law uses it. That is certainly not how the law uses it. In terms of the District Registries Act, which is the law that governs registration of land or property in this country, township has a fixed meaning. And that's what's projected on the wall. What the Section 102 of the District Registries Act call a township. A township simply refers to a group of pieces of land or of subdivisions of a piece of land which are combined with public spaces. It talks about the combination for the purpose of registration. So when we talk about opening of a township register, it has nothing to do with a black area or a previously black area. Absolutely nothing. Or if we talk about application in terms of clause 33 of the bill, it is a word. If you look at clause 33, for instance, I would say township establishment. It is not that we seek to establish townships in the sense that we ordinarily use them around. The process, if you want to have the most expensive upfront beachfront residential property in the most expensive part of Cape Town, if it's a virgin land, what you do in the district office is to go and open a township register for that land. And that's what this law defines it to mean, and nothing else.
It's a democratic, not a class.
It has nothing to do with class. It has nothing to do with race. It has more to do with the formal registration. This word is what the law says it is. This is what the law says.
Suburb is also a township.
That's why I said the nickname and its evolution, how it evolved into the lingo, is a different subject entirely. But for the purposes of land use, I'll be glad to be shown the other way to understand it.
I can't follow this. I've indicated in some other time that if I have a house in the county, that house has no value. But if I have a house in the suburb, the value of that house, even if they are similar, the value of that house is higher than the value of the house in the county. Now, if you say it is just a word, to me, then you'll have to convince me if these things are the same. If the value of the house, similar to the house in the country, is not the same, why is it if the word means township even in the suburbs and in the township? Why the discrimination? Then we must do something about it.
Chairperson, what has been said is perfectly correct on both sides of the coin. One must remember Soweto, southwestern townships. That the word township in South African law actually comes from English law. And what Sunday said is perfectly correct. Zoyas, in terms of the Land Survey Act and the Deeds Registries Act, when they talk of township, they're talking about this concept of which is non-racial in legal terms. It's non-historical. It's a term to define a particular conglomeration of certain issues in terms of ownership, land, spaces, roads, services, etc. In our past, in public usage, we took Soweto, southwestern townships, and we latched onto that word township as lay ordinary people. And the discrimination comes from the fact that the Soweto township house was vastly different legally to the suburb. The house in the suburb in Sandton was registered, freehold title, no problems with ownership in terms of a white person owning it. And that's exactly what we're trying to rectify now, is that discrimination where township in the layman's term was a derogatory term. It meant something lesser, because in fact legally it was lesser. But I take the point that Mama Lydia is talking about. Perhaps we must try and find a way of getting away from the derogatoriness of the meaning of township. And if we can't do that, perhaps in the meantime find another word for it. But legally, there is no discrimination. A township can be in the middle of the Free State, miles away from Bloemfontein or wherever. Legally, it would still be registered in, identified, surveyed in terms of a general plan, in terms of the Land Survey Act, and it would be called a township. In the deeds office, it would be registered, as Sunday says, you would open a township register. Legally, there is no racial discrimination in the word. Legally, there is no urban or rural discrimination in the word.
In fact, where I stay, maybe before you do so, Mowgli.
I'll forget.
Okay.
I'll forget. I just want to find out if that country is not discriminated, is not limited, why the whites were prohibited to stay in the country? There were hundreds of people from moving into the country for their safety. Not for anything, for their safety. But now, it makes me wonder, if even with the now you can't say it has nothing to do with race and discrimination. Because you wouldn't come to my country during that time. You would be arrested. And take
Mama,
out for your safety.
Everything
I
agree. Socially, yes, there was,
but legally, there is nothing. Yeah, you see, where I live, I live in what ordinarily we call a suburb. But I know that that place where I stay, they call it the township. It's a security village, but they call it the township. You know? So I'm saying legally, as you say, he may be right. He is right. But our experience with the word might be different.
Because I wouldn't go to a suburb. I would be arrested because I'm trespassing.
Oh,
I'm trespassing because I'm black. I'm not supposed to be in the white suburb.
But legally, a suburb is not defined.
Yeah, it's a
Before he gets in there.
Yeah.
I think we need to debate this. It's very painful. Now, in this new dispensation, I talk about houses, the difference between the value of the house in the country, and the house in the suburb. I think the department has to deal with the issue of state, property agents as well. Because really, this thing is still being practiced, even as I'm talking to you now. I can't sell the house that I'm living in the village. Unkosi talks about villages as well. I can't sell it at the price that I would have sold my house. I have a house in Mamelodi. The price of that house cannot match the price of the house that I'm staying in Mpumalanga, a village. And the estate agents are playing around that our people are being deprived of what they have sweat for years and years. Some have used all their pensions to build those houses. But really they can't even make that house a collateral. We need not be jumpy about these things because they affect people directly.
Chair, thanks. I've deliberately propose that we look at this definition with a view to understanding when we in clause 33 of the bill say that an application for township establishment, we are certainly not proposing that township that we all know be established in terms of this law. We are proposing that a mechanism should continue to be created for the establishment of the township as the law recognizes it. And then what I'm saying is that it leads me to the definition of formality and informal settlement. The reality of the past, as painful as it is that the Disregistry Act, and that's where the problem exactly is, and it has implications for other laws and some laws managed by the Department of Land Affairs. The reality is that most areas where the majority lived were not within the formal areas of the economy. So when you say the formal areas, you are then saying that formal townships like this were indeed not established in many of those areas where the majority lived. So to that extent, those areas where you do not have formal townships established in terms of this registry, that there were no full titles to houses there. To that extent, the call is that land use system, the land use scheme, because there were no land use schemes in all these areas we're talking about. Land use schemes or town planning schemes existed only in the former white areas. So the primary basis for formalization of informal settlement did not even exist. We are now saying in terms of this bill, all land in the country must be subject to a land use scheme, which starts to start addressing the question of rights in land. So the question of the value of a property in a formal area like a suburb, as we do know it, and an informal area where there may not be a full title like in a township, as we colloquially call it, the difference in the value is born out of the fact that the kind of title to those two properties, even though they are physically the same, differs in terms of the law. Most of the other properties may not even have full titles in terms of the district registry. And the elementary basis for to start addressing that subject is to have a land use scheme first. So that the then it engages with your Act 112 on the upgrading of rights. So a number of other laws that will then address the formalization of informal settlement. What we are saying is that in order to look at this first economy and the second economy property, which is the first world, which is registered in terms of the district registries act, which has a land use scheme, which is surveyed, most of the property we're talking about in the old townships or in the rural areas had no formal survey. So for you to have a title, a full title, the land needs to be surveyed. There's no survey. So there's no full title. And that's a very loaded discussion that is needed. But we think that the primary basis to start addressing it should start from a land use scheme. And that's what we are proposing. So the top-level discussion, I'm sure they will be had at the appropriate time. But I'm saying this because one of the comments the city of Johannesburg raised, and in addressing that comment here, is that they've got 182 informal settlements. And when they talk about informal settlements, they're talking about areas without formal title deeds. And there was a research done by Finmark Trust around the value of these properties as has been raised, that as beautiful as these houses can be, or maybe, the value is affected by its location. So we're saying that if now we have land use schemes in all areas, the question of surveying becomes easier. The question of definition of what it can legally be used for becomes defined. And it starts interfacing with other laws to grant full titles. But then, what we are proposing, and we should have amendments on that, is the question of, in those areas where there are no formal titles, this law should start teasing the question of regularization of titles there. Though Act 112 deals with upgrading of titles. I mean, land tax adjustment also deals with it. But the question of the DSC, for instance, deals with those kind of discussion around how do you, if there's no land town planning scheme, how do you deal with informal settlements there? And we're going to bring those sections into this bill. And it's not because it is not there. There is already a process for exemptions in trying to deal with that. But the actual dealing with conversion of titles from either no title to full title is dealt with Act 112 already, as it is. It's a process that we can go into later. But we are saying that we'll be bringing amendments to address what appears to be a gap, but which actually is fully dealt with elsewhere, but to the extent that it has relationship for land use scheme, will bring a provision that deals with a formal settlement or expedited procedures or regularization of informal title. And we already stated that in the proposed amendment we made, and that was the comment we understand Johannesburg to be making. And they are not saying that we should grant title in terms of a land use planning bill, but to start addressing how the municipality should deal with land use in informal settlements. And we will take note of that, and we will look at the DFA, the Less Formal Township Establishment Act also, with a view to seeing how the land use system interfaces with that. But then there was another question on the restrictive conditions. We were actually asked to say, when we talk about restrictive conditions, what do we mean? We can go into the legal definition of restrictive conditions. But at a practical level, we can give our terrible examples and good examples of what restrictive conditions are. An example of a restrictive condition will have been, let's put it this way. A restrictive condition is simply a condition in a title deed where A is selling to B, and A is saying that though I'm selling to you, I do not want this land to be used for some for certain purposes. If certain provisions of the District Registries Act are complied with, those conditions will be valid. And unfortunately, one of the uses to which restrictive conditions was made in this country was racial classification, for instance. In private title deeds, some people will even say that I do not want a black person or a coolie to stay on my property. So that's an example of a restrictive condition. No, there were words. Did there are words like coolies in the title deed? I'm not making. They wrote it in this title deed. There are examples. So I'm not trying to say what.
I'm told coffee is ready, so we can just go out and grab some cup.
But restrictive conditions can also have positive uses in terms of how you wish a land. I mean, if you have historical land, I mean, there are some restrictive conditions which gave land to the state for military purposes, and they said no, as long as it continues to be used for that purpose. So there are those kind of conditions. And what the Removal of Restrictions Act did was to create a process to say these conditions, even though they were imposed and they were agreed to between the buyer and the sellers at the time of sale, that if the circumstances of the day do not require them, you can apply via a mechanism for that condition to be removed from the title deed. And we are saying we do not need a separate law for that now. So we are repealing the Removal of Restrictions Act and bringing that provision in this section to create a framework for removal of restrictions. So it can be an obligation, as has been noted. It can also be a restriction. But it basically talks to conditions of title of how and what a piece of land can be used for, but it's usually agreed between buyer and seller. So when the question around extra constitutional burden that was introduced by Clause 35 in this bill, the idea behind it was some of these restrictive conditions might be imposed for good reasons, and it felt that it may be a property right, even though it's not full ownership right. That so if Section 25 provisions are satisfied, there should be a framework to compensate the person who imposed the condition for the loss of his property rights, because he had a right in that land, that's why he imposed it or she imposed it. And then the subsection then said that the person to pay the compensation is the person who is seeking to remove the restrictive condition. It's a novel, it's a new process entirely. It's not in any known law. We are debating this, and based on what we, it's an extension of Section 25 actually. We actually got convinced that indeed and in reality, every land use measure has an effect on the land market. So there is no need to create a framework for compensation. That's why we then removed the clauses 2, 3, and 4, which introduced this question of compensation when you remove restrictive conditions. So you will still have a process for the removal of restrictions as a land use application. What we are saying is that we will not be creating a mechanism to pay anybody for the removal of a restrictive condition, as long as there is proper notice and the provisions of the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act are followed. If somebody then feels aggrieved by the fact that a condition has been removed and that it has a value, the person can pursue that process elsewhere, but not in terms of this land use legislation. Because we may also remember that in terms of Clause 74 of this bill, we were saying that land use decisions must not be stopped just on the basis that the value of a property is going to be affected. So we believe that we do not want the question of compensation and value to stand on the way of equitable land use management or equitable use of land. So that's as we have it on the restrictive condition. Other members, on the question of overlap, the Community Law Center came. As we stated, what Community Law Center came here to say? Indeed, we were grateful to them. These things have been said in many of their publications. We do understand it. we are conceding, and they are not talking about, in the, if you look at the earlier part of their comments, they were giving general constitutional comments around overlap created by the Constitution, not by this bill. They are saying that the way the Constitution is structured, there are two possible overlaps. While the Constitution grants powers to municipalities, it also states that provinces must supervise municipalities. In addition to creating that first level of overlap, that means what municipalities can do, they can be supervised by the national government. In addition to that, it also says national government can make legislation for the effective performance of those functions by the municipality. That's the first level of overlap. The second level of overlap is that if you look at the schedules to the Constitution, there are quite a number of things. If you look at health, for instance, it's listed in both schedules. It's what a municipality can do or a province can do. So there are quite a lot of those items which are contained in different parts of the schedule, which actually are not clearly defined as to the extent and the boundaries between the powers of municipalities and provinces or national government. And that's the second level of overlap that they are talking about. So they are then advising us to say, don't compound the problem. Recognize this problem and make sure that you clearly state what each of the spheres can do and should do in respect of land use management. The further advice is that we can define municipal planning. As desirable as that advice is, municipal planning goes beyond land use. So we can only define land use, municipal planning in relation to land use. And that we are saying, what we have done, they specifically pointed to the possibility that when we say provinces should do certain things, like determine provincial interest, I think in terms of clause 37 of the bill, they are saying that may be an intrusion on the powers of, if we don't define it clearly, if we use words like provincial growth and development strategy, we may be going into the realm, we may be introducing further confusion, clarify it. And we are saying that even though there are guidelines, at the moment, Department of Provincial and Local Government has got guidelines for developing provincial growth and development strategies. So even though there are guidelines, in order to make sure we eliminate the possibility of confusion in future, we are then saying that we will propose that we change the word provincial growth and development strategy to something which is more certain, which is more that something which affects municipal plan, provincial planning. So we're just proposing was to throw more clarity into the words we have used because of the possibility, even though we do not have, we are not saying that it's confusing, but to make it clearer than it is. So we have indeed taken note of the comments by the Community Law Center from the University of Western Cape. And many of their comments are truly proper analysis of what the Constitution proposes. And to that extent, we're just throwing more clarity on what we have. We were told that the question of alignment, and reference was made to the judgment of the Constitutional Court, which was released on the 25th of July. As a department, with other departments like DPLG and DPLG, Department of Agriculture, and ourselves, we had looked at the implication of the judgment in Sao. Right from the time the Supreme Court of Appeal gave judgment last year, we've listened to all the arguments. We've looked at it. So when the judgment came, the judgment on Sao is basically about Act 70 of 1970, subdivision of agricultural land. And the problem in that case was whether or not the introduction of wall-to-wall municipalities now has got the effect of destroying all agricultural land. Because if we look at the Subdivision of Agricultural Land Act of Act 70 of 1970, it states that all land outside the municipal boundary will be agricultural land. Now that we have municipalities all over, does it mean that we don't, because there is no land outside the municipal boundary, does it mean that we do not have agricultural land anymore? And the Supreme Court of Appeal then said that because all land now falls within a municipal boundary, the question of agricultural land, the meaning we give to agricultural land in terms of the subdivision of agricultural land act, is now affected, so there is no automatic agricultural land. If that were to be so, it was very grievous for government. Because what that would have meant was that the definition of agricultural land in the Subdivision of Agricultural Land Act would have been totally destroyed. So there would technically not be agricultural land in the country. The Constitutional Court reversed that. And in reversing that, as Honorable Landy said, it then stated that different spheres can still coexist, even though municipalities have this mandate on determining land uses. But we can coexist. We just want to confirm that we have looked at this judgment right from the day it was delivered. We've traced it from before it was delivered. The Deputy Minister had tasked us to even look at the implications if the Constitutional Court had not come to that conclusion. So we can confirm to you that in terms of alignment, where we're guided by that thinking that we all can coexist, municipal, provincial, and national sphere in this regard, without one necessarily excluding the other. Because when we listen to some of these comments around our encroachment, it is more about this is municipal planning, leave us alone to do it. Or provinces saying this is our power, leave us alone. We're saying that we all, and as the judgment confirms, that we all can indeed, and we have the judgment here, we can, you refer to some clauses we can take through. We believe that we are truly taking cognizance of that. Undue delay. You raised the question of undue delay as to what do we really mean by undue delay. Within the current legislative framework, what we do have is the use of the word unreasonable delay. And maybe we want to explain what has led us to this policy option. In Johannesburg, let's say, I don't want to be accused of Johannesburg-based terminologies now. In most parts of the country, one of the results of studies conducted, including the study by National Treasury, is that there is a lot of red tape, almost like you accuse officials of Honorable Lali, a lot of red tape in approval process. No, as you noted about officials. Okay. That there's a lot of red tape in land use applications. Because of the need to go here, to go and take environmental application, to go and do heritage here, and to comply with different laws, what we have is a scenario where people even raise objections. A former colleague of mine would say that because lawyers are almost taking over land use decisions now, I mean, there are people in Johannesburg who take senior counsel to go and argue land use cases. So what you practically have is a scenario where you have judicialized land use decision-making process, where people then raise objections, they then have full-scale arguments and files of arguments and all this stuff. To the extent that some land use decisions take years to reach, that you want to build a mall here, you want to do housing development here, people then raise objection that we're growing butterfly in this part of the country. Don't come and build low-cost housing next to it. So those kind of, with regard to environmentalists, what I'm saying is that those kind of objections can be raised, that we need to protect the fauna and the flora and all this stuff. So to that extent, there is a lot of delay in the land use application process. Because of this delay, taking decision becomes prolonged for a longer time. So we are saying that in the proposed regulatory framework, instead of a system where land use decisions can take eternally, why don't we have a process that allows us to prescribe what amounts to undue delay? So to an extent, it can be time-bound, but we cannot say 60 days is undue delay and it's a universal application. It's going to be very dangerous because there are different, application for a very small development will be different from a mega application like house trend, for instance. It's a land use decision. So depending on the scale and the intensity and the nature of the application, we will be able to, via regulation, then prescribe what are the conducts or what are the scenarios that lead to undue delay. And if there are undue delays, it takes that decision off that particular land use regulator and escalates it to the next level. But the idea behind it is to introduce a framework that assists us in managing the time, because it has economic implications also for taking land use decisions. I think I've addressed clause 33. The question around clause 78(4) was also raised, whether or not it is, when we spoke earlier, I think we addressed the question of 78(4). we are saying here that it cannot be an encroachment, because the argument is that is this not unconstitutional encroachment by the provinces on what functionally belongs to the municipality? In fact, the extension of this argument is a little bit dangerous, because the danger in it is that if we look at the functional responsibilities of municipalities and we say that it is the municipality that has the power to do this and we leave it to them, if there is no appeal process or if there is no intervention process, it can lead to a scenario where lack of capacity can actually paralyze service delivery in the municipality. So what we are saying in 78.4 is to then propose that a municipality has an obligation, indeed a duty, if it finds that it has no capacity to do something, we believe that it will be responsible of that municipality, and it will be the responsibility of the municipality to take a decision to then refer that kind of application to a higher level. And that's why if we look at, we have also proposed, I think in clause 19 of the bill, to say that in addition to addressing this question of capacity, before you get to 78.4, if a municipality thinks it doesn't have capacity, why can't it reach agreements with an adjoining municipality so that they can do it together? So the question of whether a local municipality has got 4 staff members and they don't have membership of municipal land use committee, they should know. If they don't have the budget to do it, then why don't they agree with their neighbors so that they can both have just one single committee? Two municipalities can have a single committee to do it. But all in all, what we are saying is that we do not have a situation where there is paralysis in municipal administration because of lack of capacity. Then we take it to the provincial level. But what we believe that Chapter 2 of the bill, which enjoins the national government and the provincial government to capacitate municipalities to support them, should then say that if you look at Chapter 2 of this bill, a municipality without capacity can appeal to the national government and say, we do not have capacity. How do we do this job that you want us to do? It is their job right now, even as people. So lack of capacity should not be an excuse for lack of service delivery. That's what we're saying. So they have a number of options.
I think this issue, let's crack it when Sarah guy is here. Let's pack it and crack it.
A question was asked around the term of office of our municipal land use committee. As we have it at the moment, on the term of office of municipal land use committee, as we do have it now, we are proposing a term of office of 3 years for members of the municipal land use committee. City of Johannesburg came here and they said that we should be a bit more flexible, that there is this question of staff turnover because of better offers elsewhere, probably. So people are leaving, and it's true. So if officials are... Functional? So because of I thought someone said floor crossing all. Because of possibilities of officials moving or membership of the committee changing, they said we should be a bit more flexible in prescribing term of office. We've taken heed of this advice. We will then be amending, I think, clause 8 or so of the bill. So to create a scenario where the politicians in the municipality define the terms and conditions and the term of office for members of the municipal land use committee. So we will not be tying it to 3 years.
Will that also apply with the provincial settlement?
We'll look at that. But what we're saying is that then the question of the term of office, conditions, and the years they serve will be at the discretion of the politicians at the local level. There was a reference to senior staff members of municipalities. And people said that terminology will change. It hasn't changed. But then, we have decided to use the word employees, which conforms to the future legislation. So we will be proposing that we just do a small typewriters, printers amendments there to do, to change senior staff members to employees. I wonder if I have attempted...
The issue there was about the conduct of members.
The conduct of we've already... okay, abuse of power. There are quite a number of provisions in this
section
bill.
Section 15.
Yes, section 15. We're saying there are three ways in which we can deal with members of the municipal land use committee. If somebody is a functionary, the person will be subject to your normal employment rules. So the person cannot take bribes, of course, or should not take bribes.
Was the reference to the municipal system side.
Yeah. Okay. The reference, we are referring to the systems side because they are municipal officials, and in terms of the systems side, there is a code of conduct already prescribed in terms of the systems side. I would believe it should be applicable to somebody serving on the municipal land use committee.
So, as in the context of the thing on public service, how do you then deal with the provisions of municipal systems act, which therefore means that once that bill comes into operation, those provisions will be antiquated. Therefore, the reference here will be problematic.
We can take advice from the drafting perspective from the statutory advisor, but it will not be my view that we cannot refer to the Systems Act because it is still in the law at the moment. We may be,
but it's here in Parliament.
The public has been, or Act will deal with what happens to code of conduct made in terms. They will still have effect. There will be a transitional clause in that legislation.
But maybe person, there is a drafting technique that we can use where we will add after the reference to the Municipal Systems Act a sub-provision to the effect that refers to that act or any legislation that replaces it, which will then cover the Public Service Amendment Bill when it becomes an act and comes into operation.
Sure, that's already catered for in the Interpretation Act already of what happens if you make reference to a legislation now and it's preceded by another law. So I would not probably even want to look at imagining what happens because it's dealt with in another law, what happens. But we'll get advice on that.
Okay,
sure, I hope I'll be able to cover all the issues.
Yeah.
on the issue of the time of office, I don't know whether you have looked at the time of office of the councillors themselves, which is 5 years. And if the time of office of the 3 year term of office which will end between the 5 years, a little bit, when those councillors will be left in 2 years, and then they put in a new, committee which will overlap to the other term of office of other councillors. Wouldn't it disrupt the work? And if you say again, it will be at the discretion of the councillors. If they say 4 years, the same thing will happen. You always have new people who are learning.
I think what they are suggesting is that there will be flexibility in terms of the term of office, that the executive authority that appoints this committee would then determine the term of office for the specific municipality. So the 3 year term thing will be amended. So we'll have to adjourn at this point, but except to say that tomorrow, let's have this amendment ready. My preference is that they must be written into the